space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazayasradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you have access to not one but four separate chat rooms, as well as if you scroll down on that same page there, you'll find a link for People Radio Network. Also, check out Wolf Spirit Radio and all the other affiliated networks. You'll find links all over this website here. So, anyway, getting right into it, I put something in there kind of rude. I probably won't read it. Yeah, but it makes me mad. All right? This whole world just makes me so mad. I can't even see straight half the time I'm mad. No wonder I wear glasses. Anyway, can't spend the rest of your life being mad all the time, I guess. But I've been doing a lot of research in just about everything alternative. Our subject under the sun, alternative. And if anything's to be believed in this world, you know, it's just really frustrating. The biggest example I guess I can give, probably top of the line, is in the healthcare industry. The fact that I've lost a few members through my life via cancer, and some of the information that I come across while doing my research out here, you know, on the World Wide Web, seeking information, trying to find the truth and solutions to problems in the world, you know, trying to make the world a better place. Well, apparently, according to some folks out there, has been a cure for cancer since 1967. Now, probably way before then, sure, you know, natural cures that maybe, you know, some people knew about, or maybe other people, you know, didn't know about, rediscovering or whatever. That doesn't matter. Just what really frustrates me, I can't even remember the guy's name now because I'm just kind of like, just messed up. I'm mad. I'm angry. So I can't even think straight. So anyway, this particular episode's over in Texas. It's been going on for some time or whatever. Now I'll have to look it back up. It's just aggravating. But nonetheless, if it's the case, which I do believe it is, I believe that there are cures already on the table, have been for so many different diseases, so many different ailments, that the mainstream medical industry, just for whatever purposes, mostly I think financially, politically, or for whatever purposes, don't allow certain things in the hospitals. Whether, you know, they, instead of trying to, you know, treat and cure the disease, they, you know, basically just do ridiculous stuff like either cutting somebody or, you know, basically radiating their immune system away and just making a miserable mess out of that individual's life. When I truly believe that there are non-invasive methods by which you can actually cure cancer. If you understand the mechanics of the body and the chemistry and all that kind of stuff, then, you know, for everything, every cause, there's a, you know, there's an action that happens afterwards, you know, cause and effect or whatever. God, I can't even think straight because I'm so hacked off. You know, there's supposedly a mass fish die-off going on in Florida right now because of algae blooms. Easily, ridiculously easy to solve. And I sent emails out to, you know, the governor of Florida. You know, at the time, I don't know who's the governor now, but been sending emails out to everybody. I even sent emails to the president of the United States. I've sent emails to all kinds of people for all kinds of different subjects, solutions, trying to be helpful in, you know, providing some information or at least some insight or something to look at that maybe got overlooked or whatever. But it seems like these people in power, they don't care. They don't care enough, or maybe it's just a case of, you know, there's like 320 million people in the United States, and so, you know, you can't get around to reading all their emails. Kind of like when you get on one of these fancy YouTube channels and they got like 3 million subscribers or something like that, and one guy shouts out in the crowd, "Hey, I got a solution for you," you know, and it's just overlooked. It just gets washed down in the stream of data that people are typing in crazy stuff in the doggone deal, you know. Oh, the government's terrible, everybody's terrible, you know, and this is shameful and all that, and here's the solution going further and further downstream in that data, and it never gets seen. So I'll even go as far as sending a private message to that particular YouTuber for whatever deal that, you know, I might be talking about. So that hopefully they'll have a second chance to get that information. Plus I will post it out here on Shaziz Radio, or I'll post it on Twitter, or I'll post it on, you know, Facebook or whatever. even maybe you can do a video on YouTube or whatever, you know. But once again, data stream and what gets seen and what doesn't get seen. It says that I got 8,500 subscribers. I don't believe that I've even got 2 or 3, maybe. Possibly 5 or 10, I don't know. But the numbers just don't reflect the, you know, the effort that goes into actually making a video, for one. But the numbers don't reflect the, in the views or whatever. I got a couple people that I'm pretty sure that are, you know, my loyal thumbs downers, and you can count on those guys to show up and thumb down every single video that I got, you know. But when it comes down to anything else out there, you know, as far as 8,500 some odd subscribers, and who knows how many people is actually listening to this radio broadcast right now. You know, the numbers on my side show some pretty good, you know, impressive numbers, but it's like, I just can't believe that if the world is in the mess that it is, that people wouldn't be grasping for every single straw, every single possible solution to resolve anything that needs to be resolved. Whether it be environmental or, you know, medical or just, you know, energy crises or whatever. All these things that we're told that is supposedly problems in the world. You'd think that one person shouting out in the wind, you know, they'd be listening. Anybody got any ideas, you know? Throw them out here on the table. Let's get this thing resolved. But it don't seem to go like that. And if you can't even get response from the supposed leadership of the world, it doesn't seem like they even care. You know, it just drives me batty to literally sit back and watch as this world is told to us is going to heck in a handbasket and nothing gets resolved. I'm going to play a podcast here, and I'll probably stop it and start it a little bit. Might be a little bit obnoxious at times, but I'm going to play a podcast. But this is a guy named Tom Bearden, who's in alternative energy research, and it's talking about pulling energy from the vacuum, but it's not just the research itself that I want you to take note of. It's some of the things that he said, you know, basically kind of things that he thought were going to be happening in the future. Of course, we're way past the time frame that he said that, you know, the world was basically going to come to an end or whatever if we didn't get our act together. So I don't think the world's going to come to an end. What I think is that it's going to go on business as usual, and the money men are going to continue to make money. They don't want to destroy the planet because, obviously, you got to have your peasants if you want to be king. So it's not that. I want to play this because there's a lot of good points in there, and there's even a mention of a researcher, which I also play a little tiny, it's about a 1 minute podcast of a deal. But I'm going to just do these live mic because it's easier for me to do that. But so if you hear any, if I drop something in the background, just ignore that and listen to what the message is. But before I get into all that, and, you know, I said I've lost a lot of family members to cancer. And it's a shame. It's a shame because I am 150,000% convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt. And I know in this world it's not what you believe, it's what you can prove that matters. But I believe that this that the cure for cancer has been around since, if not, it's just shortly after I was born. I was born in 65. The particular guy that that's had a cure for cancer, he's from Poland, and he had been out there. He's a real doctor. He really has, you know, people that he treated that shouldn't be alive because they were told they were going to die that are still alive. And so his work is well documented. It's not something that, you know, somebody just threw out there on YouTube and made it up or whatever. Which is another portion of what I want to get into, is about the whole free energy thing that I, you know, I've been saying this for a long time. You know, these people out there faking free energy devices and just making a complete and utter mockery of what, you know, I'm trying to get around. I'm trying to really show people that energy is free, with beyond a shadow of a doubt. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, you know, and I'm not even talking 0 point or over unity. I'm talking free energy that we're surrounded in. and methods by which you can reuse energy over and over and over again. It's just, I'll try to get into this as calmly as possible, but it's really kind of hard because when you Google up or YouTube, it's one and the same, Google, YouTube, whatever. You know, you look it up, free energy on YouTube, and you'll come across the very first one that showed up on my screen. I don't know what's going to show up on yours, but the very first one that showed up on mine is somebody that has a light bulb connected to a speaker. Now, that's blatantly obvious. This is BS. All right? And so, I will look at it. I will see if there's any plausibility to it, but I understand that what's going on with this deal right here, you'd have to vibrate that diaphragm of that speaker so doggone rapidly that, you know, there's just not enough there. It's not going to run a resistive load such as a tungsten element. And then the next one right down underneath it is a speaker magnet wrapped around with, you know, some wire on both sides of this thing, almost set up like a transformer style deal, and it's supposedly running another tungsten element. Right underneath that is one of the legitimate guys, Tom Bearden. And in between all of this right here, you'll have maybe a good researcher, but you'll have thousands of different ridiculous fake devices that people put out there. And it just makes it all look bad. So you gotta wonder, is this an intentional way to discourage real researchers by not, you know, if you make it, everybody and his brother look stupid, it's kind of like the tinfoil hat label. You tell, well, if they believe in a conspiracy, they're a tinfoil hat wearing nut, you know? So you put this out here with all these just flat out fake devices and allow these people to monetize. If you go to watch some of these videos, it's ridiculous how many commercials they have. They'll put tons of advertisements on one video, and all the way through this entire video, you got to click out of these doggone ads, because if you want to see the whole thing through, you got to sit there and watch all this advertisement. So these folks have got thousands of subscribers, and they're probably making money hand over fist via YouTube just by causing the mess in the doggone free energy community. The alternative energy community, green energy community, whatever. And even the over-unity or zero-point community. It's crazy. Just even in the free energy world alone, you got all these different labels and different factions and stuff. It's just nutty. But, you know, you go through and you look at all these different things and you click on them, you watch them, you know, and somebody's getting paid for you watching it. And people are just slapping a bunch of junk together, you know, and calling it science. It's not, you know. Now, granted, I did my videos on my YouTube. I did them creatively because I wanted to put information out there a little bit at a time to show something to somebody so that eventually they'd understand. But I also made sure that if you really pay attention to my YouTube channel and you look, there's a question mark in the description, then I'm asking you a question. It's plain and simple. That's what question marks are for. I'm asking you a question. Do you think this is possible? And I'll show my version of what I think is maybe possible in there. But there's also something else in there besides, you know, what the video itself is pertaining to. There might be something sitting right beside me or in the background, just so that people that have an open mind and are paying attention to detail will see this kind of stuff. There's a reason for this. And, you know, there is a method for my madness, and part of which you'll hear Tom Bearden talk about in here. But anyway, so if you're scrolling down through there, you look at all these different types of free energy devices, and it's just ridiculous how much crud is actually presented as free energy. And you'll even see ones where you'll get into the hoodoo voodoo version of it, where, you know, you're going to travel with your mind and all this energy right here, and the Keshis of the world, you know, those folks out there that are taking money hand over fist from people and not producing. We're here in the year 2018, and these supposed people who have, you know, got these things all figured out, but they're wanting to make money off of it, you know, those are the ones that you got to keep your eyes on, because there's so many criminals and crooks out there in this world. It's just ridiculous. So you ain't never going to hear me ever ask you for money, for donations. You're not going to hear me ask you to buy my device or buy my plans. If I got plans, they're going right there on the deal. You can download it for free. You can try it before you deny it, and then you can come back and tell me where I was right or where I was wrong or whatever. That's the difference between me and a lot of the different researchers out there. I wouldn't say to the extent of 80 to 90% of all of them out there, because there's probably a lot of good ones out there, but, you know, haven't even heard of some of them. Just like, you know, some of the ones that Tom Barron's going to mention in here, I haven't heard of. And, you know, so I'm going to look into them to find even more. But the whole key about the deal is that with everybody out there muddying up the water with, you know, ridiculousness, and the other ones out there basically saying free energy doesn't exist and calling people stupid because they believe in free energy. Oh, well, there's no such thing as perpetual motion. There's no such thing as over unity, and it defies the laws of thermodynamics and all that ridiculousness. Number one, these folks, they think they're educated, but they're not. They're indoctrinated. There's a difference. You're not educated, you're indoctrinated. And if all you can quote is the book, if you can't even use some critical thinking outside of the box of yourself, you're just as ignorant as everybody else out there who didn't go to school or college. That's the way it is. And just because you think that you can remember everything that's in that school book, you might even be a really great at mathematics, you know, you might be a really good mathematician. But if you're not willing to look out at out of the box with a critical eye and look at possible solutions and even test known theories and all that kind of stuff, well, then you're just as part of the problem. You're not helping to solve anything. On one side of your neck, you'll holler about global warming, climate change, or climate disruption, or whatever it's going to be next week when the math or the weather don't add up. But then out the other side of your neck, you're trying to debunk anybody who's trying to say that the energy is free and that there is ways that we can clean up our environment and work in perfect harmony with our environment. I get frustrated because I feel like I'm talking to myself 99.9% of the time, with the exception of the wonderful souls that I end up being able to have great conversations with on Skype and coming across ideas and sharing ideas and research and all this kind of stuff, you know. So it's not a total loss. But as far as getting anything done in the world, it's frustrating as all get out, because if there was a cure in 1967 for cancer that was being held up by red tape or the Food and Drug Administration or, you know, any of the doggone government officials or whatever, even the medical industry, the hospitals, that means I lost all these family members for nothing. That's just on the cancer side of the deal. You know, there's people out there right now, supposedly there's been forest fires that's burned down all kinds of people's houses. There's been all kinds of adverse weather. Of course, it's all blamed on climate change, you're sure of that. Nonetheless, it couldn't have anything to do with rogue governments or ridiculousness. It couldn't have anything to do with, you know, natural causes or, you know, anything like that. It all has to be, you know, you go pay your carbon tax and we'll stop burning down the forest is more like it. You know, so this is why I'm getting mad. Because I know there's solutions out there. My mind works mechanically. I can see everything mechanically. I can see electricity mechanically. I can see medical, the body, the biology mechanically. I can see the workings of chemistry in my mind as if it was a clock that was ticking. And I'm watching the gears turning. I can see it. And I'm trying to convey this message out to anybody and everybody out there so that they know that there's a possibility we could actually resolve things. Am I saying that I'm the only one in this world that has any kind of knowledge? No, I'm not even trying to even say that I'm even smart for that matter. I'm just telling you the way I see it. And I know that I paid attention in science class, so I know what the heck I can see. I know what will work and I know what won't work. And I understand it. So, I'm not even trying to say I'm better than anybody. All I'm saying is if people out there in this world keep complaining about how terrible this world really is, how terrible the oil industry, how terrible the coal industry, how terrible the government is, but then you try to put a solution on the table, everybody needs to come together and we need to fix this thing, is what has been said over and over ad nauseum. And when you don't see any kind of results, it's really frustrating. If there's all these fish dying off in Florida, like I saw the video, I mean, it looked like millions of fish, not just thousands, millions of fish. Part of which could have been from the British Petroleum Company throwing Corexit down in the water, which back then when that was going on, I was shouting all four points of the compass, don't do that. Because it's going to throw the chemistry off balance. It's going to come back with a vengeance, and it may very well be the cause of a lot of what's going on. It could be a dual cause. It could be partially red tide, which is a natural occurrence, but then aggravated by the green algae coming from the other side, which is also a natural occurrence, but that is also being aggravated by the farmers that are having highly nutrient-rich water running off it down into Lake Okeechobee, which then in turn, they have to relieve the dams over there, so they let water out towards the Gulf of Mexico and then water out towards the other side, and it's causing this doggone algae bloom to kill off all the fish in the general vicinity. And I don't even know what they're doing with the dead fish when they scrape them up off the ground. But there's another resource. As disgusting as it sounds, even the dead fish could be recycled into energy. But how many times can you sit out here and shout at all four points of the compass and trying to get people's attention? You know, it's like, I sometimes want to just get up and walk away from this whole entire deal and say the heck with it. But if this is the world that I'm going to be leaving behind for my grandchildren, yeah, I can't just in good conscience just get up and walk away. I got to reach out with my voice and, you know, whatever resources that I can muster. And I'm really adamant about not taking money from people because I'm not trying to scam anyone. I'm honestly putting forth a honest, truthful campaign to try to put this world back to where it needs to be as far as the so-called energy crisis and trying to resolve the deals. So I don't want anybody to be able to come back and say, oh, well, you stole my money and you didn't give me nothing. I don't want anybody to say, well, you're just doing this for money. You're just doing this for clicks. You're just doing it for attention or whatever. Whatever kind of craziness they want to throw my way, I'm not going to give them the opportunity to try to make it look like I'm trying to steal money from people by perpetrating a fraud on the world. What I'm doing is I'm reaching out and I'm watching these videos, I'm researching into different articles, and I'm finding all these different things, and I'm bringing them to the table, I'm setting them down, I'm saying, look, I found this, let's check it out, is it any good, can we use anything from this? And I'm doing this over and over, have been doing this all this time, even on my YouTube channel, talking about Tesla, talking about all kinds of different subjects out there, showing little anomalies and little electric circuits that are things that are noteworthy. Talking about plasma technology, and I'm talking about real plasma. You know, like, you know, neon gas is incredible because you can energize it into plasma with lower voltages than you can argon gas or any of the other gases out there. You know, if you got high voltage, you can do, you know, any gas out there at the right frequency. But nonetheless, neon is a gas that at 90 volts you can get neon to it start to energize into plasma. So neon would be a really good one for a plasma reactor that you was going to use that heat energy and that light energy and the radiant energy produced by the plasma effect within that vacuum as a way to transfer heat energy or a way to transfer light and so on and so forth. So that's one of the examples that I can put out there, what I've been trying to say to people all this time. And of course, even in the so-called dream team that I've been trying to put together, I've had people come on board that just, you know, cursed me up and down the storm. I lost a lot of friends and a lot of good connections of the good researchers out there because, number one, some of them got tired of the ridiculousness of the arguing, going back and forth, bickering about stupid stuff, and some of them were basically fed a bunch of lies about me in the background, saying that, you know, I was stupid, I didn't know what the heck I was talking about, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I get so aggravated about the whole current Watson Amps debacle. And those of you who've been around long enough, you remember and you know what I'm talking about. You know, it's just ridiculousness. And what I was trying to say back then is what I'm saying right now, the same exact thing. This energy that we're talking about, this thing we call electricity, there's more to electricity than meets the eye. And it's about how this energy moves from point A to point B, and it's about current and resistance and how you get this past all these different roadblocks, these stumbling blocks that you know, keep people's free energy devices from actually functioning as they believe that they would, because there's physics involved in it and it's mechanic, you know, like gears in a machine sort of thing. So once you got an understanding of how energy actually travels around, then some of what you've read in the school books aren't going to apply anymore. If you're moving energy into a completely different form of energy, you can no longer measure it with standard analog or digital equipment. You can't measure it in current watts and amps, but it's still the same exact energy. And even their own laws of physics would say so, because energy, according to the laws of physics, can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can be changed. It's still the same energy, it's just been changed to speed it up or slow it down to a different form of energy. It's either heat or it's light or it's a combination of both, you know, or you know, electromagnetism. The system that we got running these inefficient junks and transformers and stuff, there's certain energies out there, it's still electricity. It's just moving so fast that it can't. The magnetic field expanding and collapsing is happening out of time, and it's not able to turn a rotor. It's just skimming right on by. It's trying to find a place to go. Nature's trying to find its balance. And once you understand that, then you realize you got to slow it back down. You got to slow it down to the 50 or 60 hertz range where you can now use that to get the work done that you want, because you need that amount of time depending on how that rotor has been engineered and the timing that's actually set within that rotor if you want that thing to turn. And they're designed to where they need, according to the way they're done, a lot of current in order to be able to get that going. So it's obvious that high voltage isn't going to run that. Until you understand how that high voltage is traveling and understand what you can do with that high voltage. As far as when you raise the voltage, you raise the pressure. Voltage is pressure. Voltage is what gets work done. Current, on the other hand, is putting more power. It's like a water pipe. If you got a huge water pipe, you got a volume, a large volume of water that you can push down there. That is a whole lot of power. When you got a lot of current, you got a lot of power. But with that voltage added to that right there, then that's what is able to run that, because you got a lot of volume pushing in a lot of voltage at the same time, so that it can actually make the strong magnetic field and allow that field to be able to collapse again. So if you can visualize a pipe, let's say 3 inches in diameter, and then you want to take one single pipe, maybe, you know, a half inch in diameter or whatever, and you put that one pipe with high pressure water going down that pipe, it's obvious that you can't push enough current to fill that pipe. But if you take and visualize, instead of one pipe, maybe you got 6 or more pipes that will fill the interior of that larger pipe. Now you've got all these high voltage sources coming into that pipe, pushing not only pressure, but having enough volume to fill that pipe so that when it comes down the other end, you've got the power that you need. So exactly how you can understand it with the way that plumbing it works and volume and pressure is exactly what's going on with electricity. If you think about a wire and the magnetic field that is surrounding every single wire when you induce a current into that wire, your magnetic field on the thinner wire is obviously going to be spinning, rotating really tiny circles, really fast. I mean, it's really going fast. It's high voltage. It's high pressure. So you got a little tiny magnetic field, and then when that's next to the next wire, that tiny magnetic field is doubled in size because both of those magnetic fields will combine with each other. So now you've got a stronger field. Well, in order to match the current, like the primary side of it, of that, because it's a larger wire, which is a slower, you know, a little larger circular magnetic field spiraling around this wire, then the next one in line added to it will make that even farther. So now you can visualize a larger magnetic field. For the thicker the wire is, the more surface area for the electron flow, if you're going by the electron theory, then that means that you're going to have more room for that energy to travel around, and it's going to actually be able to move slower around there, slowing down that field, but making that field stronger, because every single one of those turns of wire is going to combine with the one next one in line. And then when that energy is transferred up back and forth through the core is only used to slow down the magnetic collapse. It'll magnetize the core, and then that field will collapse, and the core will demagnetize. So you'll use like a ferrite for if you want a higher frequency, being able to do it faster, or if you want to slow it down for more current on the other side or whatever, then you use like an iron laminate style core. That way that it will, you know, slow it down. It's basically acting like a brake. But anyway, when you go on the secondary side, you got the really thin wires going, and so you're taking all that current, you're pushing the energy back and forth, and you're ramping up the voltage, and in that process you lose current, because now you don't have the volume that you had before. You still have the same energy, still the same exact energy, but all you just did was speed that energy up by shrinking the size of its surface area that it can actually travel around. The wire isn't not anything more than a railroad track, so you're guiding that energy where you want it to go. And so in order to get that back up to current again, then you need to understand how that energy is traveling, and you need to give it a larger path for it to get back around to the other side by putting more high voltage, like if you had a wire that had thousands of strands in it or whatever, a really thin wire, but they were all insulated away from each other. Now each one of those is being able to carry a separate source of high voltage, and then when it comes back into, now you're getting ready to feed it into a larger gauge wire, and you got a lot of voltage, and you got the volume necessary to fill that big pipe, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. So I'm going to start playing this podcast with Tom Bearden in there, and I hope you stick with me. I know sometimes I get aggravated, and I might sound like I'm ranting, but I'm hoping that somebody out there will hear what I'm saying, and that maybe, you know, we can get together and do some work, or maybe something I say will inspire you, or maybe we can get together and at least talk about things, and you could and try to use some of the knowledge that, you know, I'm trying to share with people. And if it benefits you, that's great. That's the whole plan, you know, because I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave a trashy world to my grandchildren. Just don't. I don't want to leave one to your grandchildren either. So anyway, let's start this deal here. Any day now.
My name is Tom Bearden, Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Army, retired. Spent 20 years, a little more than that, in the active military, mostly in air defense, various other assignments, field artillery, you know, technical intelligence assignment, liaison to Canada to some technical work going on site in turbulent wakes and reentry systems and so forth at the Canadian Armament Research and Development Establishment, and spent quite a number of tours in basically R&D work in the military, developing missile systems and things like that. For about 20 years or more, some associates and I have been researching very heavily into trying to extract electromagnetic energy from the vacuum. Now, we did so under somewhat duress because the conventional electrodynamics model does not allow this to happen. In other words, it doesn't allow you to extract excess energy from the vacuum and use that to power your load. So it doesn't allow you to make a self-powering system. So we took the approach that some of the phenomenology we had seen in experiments and so forth convinced us that it was possible, and there didn't seem to be any real physical reason why it couldn't be extracted if we could find the way to do it. But we had the problem of why doesn't the electrodynamics allow it to be done? So at the same time, we also began a study of the foundations of electronics. In other words, what are the fundamental concepts that are assumed in the theory? Where did they come from? And how did they get in there? And that was turned out to be very interesting and very pertinent, because electrodynamics kept getting modified and restricted is what kept happening to it. The original theory that Maxwell had was 20 equations and 20 unknowns, quaternion type equations. What we've done is the closed current loop circuit, where all the carriers have the same mass per charge ratio. All the buckets have the same weight, so to speak. Anytime you build a circuit like that, it's quite easy to show that the amount of energy that circuit collects when we do this free regauging and we do increase its energy, ever how much it collects, it will then use precisely 50% of that to destroy the thing that let it do that. And it's really the dipole, the source dipole. It will use that to kill itself, so to speak, and have no more excess energy. The other half will go out to the circuit and power the loads and losses. That means less than half gets to the load. Well, to restore that source dipole, in other words, so we can get some more energy in to use, it costs just as much to restore it as was used to destroy it. So we've got to put in more than we can ever get out in the load with such a squirrely circuit. And that's the only kind of circuit we've used in power systems since day one. We're still building them. We're still making power systems that deliberately kill them. So we pay the power company to have a giant wrestling match inside its generator and lose. That's really what we pay them for. So that doesn't seem to be the way to run a railroad. It would seem to be much more ideal to freely change the energy of the system, pay a little switching cost so we get it switched over to the load and dump it in the load and let it go, let it power the load. And so you can do it. So the problem we ran into was that the electrodynamics had actually been modified to throw out the very kind of systems that we had seen in our experiments, evidence that could be done, but violates the ordinary electrodynamics. And we can do it and not violate conservation of energy. We can do it in accord with thermodynamics, and we can do it in accord with physics and electromagnetics. Now, this is absolutely rigorous. I don't care how many folks want to check that. It will hold up. It is rigorous. So this was one thing we established from the study of the foundations of electromagnetics. You are permitted to have electromagnetic systems that power themselves and their load, and you don't have to put in the energy. They take it from the vacuum, the active vacuum. Our engineers are taught to throw away about 10 trillion times for a typical average case as much energy as they pull out of the vacuum without even knowing it in a generator and a battery. And it's pouring out down the circuit and misses the circuit. They throw all that away and only calculate the little bit that we catch in that circuit and then use. Now, when we measure the circuit, we obviously measure the energy being dissipated by the various pieces of that circuit. Well, if the energy is being thrown out of there, it had to get in there. So obviously the measurements of the circuit will match Poynting's theory because it'll match the energy that actually went in there to get dissipated. Like the country boy said, you got a pipe here, so to speak, and it's got some holes in it. If you measure all the water flowing out, that's how much water come in it. Now your whole river can be around it and missing the pipe, and you won't measure that. So we have built a whole science based on throwing away this enormous energy that is pulled out of the vacuum by every little old separation of charges, every dipole. Well, in the 50s, in the 1950s, particle physicists discovered, Wu and others, discovered broken symmetry. They discovered how fundamental a process something like this dipole is, where we separate two opposite kinds of charges. And T.D. Lee, for example, looked at it for physical charges and so forth, and Lee won a Nobel Prize for it. Any dipole is a broken symmetry in the furious exchange with the vacuum. It's a broken three-dimensional symmetry. What does this mean? Cutting through all the words and getting down to country boy language. It means that nature does not insist on conserving energy in three dimensions. We do because we have a three-dimensional mind. We like to think in terms of space because observation itself destroys time and what we look at is spatial. So we like to think the world is made of space, not space-time. However, nature loves to work in four dimensions. Her fundamental law is conservation of energy must apply in four dimensions. Now, you're not going to beat that one, so never think about that. But there is no law of nature that requires you to come in and say, also it must apply simultaneously in three dimensions. If we build some gadget that makes it apply in three dimensions, we apply an extra constraint on what nature will give us. Turning that around, we go around building things that insist on having this three-dimensional exchange of energy. We got to put it in three dimensions for whatever we get out and lose some in the middle. So we got a terrible situation all the way. It's called entropic engineering. We always got entropy beating us to death. Never go over unity. Forget it. Lose a lot. We talk about, you know, efficiencies at 30% and so forth for our power systems when we talk about burning the coal and all that stuff. But nature doesn't require you to do that. All you have to do is break a little bit of this three symmetry set of chains where you have tied her feet to the floor. Once you break the flow in three dimensions, you no longer have to conserve energy in three dimensions. The basic conservation of energy is an inflow from four dimensions, outflow in three dimensions. From the fourth dimension, in converted and flowed out into three. And that one is free. Giant negentropy is free. Nature will start reorganizing a goodly percentage of the whole vacuum for you, spreading at the speed of light, and will continue it as long as you leave the dipole alone. The original charges and dipoles in the original matter of the universe have been putting out energy and reorganizing the vacuum for 15 billion years. Today, we're said we can't engineer negentropy when negentropy is the easiest thing in the world to engineer, whereas entropy is the hard way to do it, and that's the way we all do it. The bottom line of this is if we'll initiate the negative entropy and let it go, it's just like you punched a hole in the ground and you got a big gusher of oil. You don't have to furnish the pressure and you don't have to furnish the oil. Here it comes. And it comes out in real oil that you can use. And the common dipole in every electrical circuit pours out energy in that fashion. The problem is not how to get enormous energy from the vacuum. That problem been totally solved. It was actually solved in 1903 had we understood it. Had we understood what Whitaker wrote. We didn't. But now we do understand it, and we do certify very rigorously with some of the AIS papers that that is for real. The problem now is how do we catch a goodly bit of this energy and use it asymmetrically. You dump it in a load, let it power that load, and not use half of it to go back over and kill the little dipole. So we set about then to build one that wasn't built that way.
It's been successful.
Yes, we have been successful. We have just built our second model. The first model produced five times out what we put in. We pay for switching costs. We don't put any energy into it to actually power the system. It comes right out of a permanent magnet, which is a dipole. The reason for using a permanent magnet is very simple. You can pass the flux back in a flux channel back through the permanent magnet, And those poles don't get destroyed. They are welded into the material when you magnetize it. It's not like little charges separated in electrical charges. You knock the charges out and destroy the dipole. So we can bypass one of the big problems with a permanent magnet. We don't have to destroy the dipole. That gives us one solution going in. The other is, how do we catch the energy? Well, that turned out to be fairly simple. We found a material which will separate the magnetic field from what's called a magnetic vector potential. The vector potential flows unceasingly from the magnet. It'll flow from now for the next 15 billion years. You can't slow it down. You can't change it as long as that magnet is there. So you have plenty of energy flow. The question is how to use it. So we use it by diversion. We reason that this flow will replenish. It's like a river. It's like a humongous river. If we dip some energy out of it, it'll replenish the hole we dipped out of at the speed of light. So for all practical purposes, instantly. So we can dip and dip and dip. We have to pay the switch to do that. But we can keep dipping, and the water fills as fast as we dip it. Then if we come down to another area and we let the water that was replenished still interact with something, and at the same time we dump the water that we dipped in there, we will have more energy by far than what we're paying for dipping. So we looked at it as an energy flow process, which it is, and we found a material which would do part of the dipping for us. It will separate the magnetic field from the magnetic vector potential. Yes, there is a history, a long history of over-unity systems.
What has happened to
it? For example, Nikola Tesla had one. Basically, his big magnifying transformer that he had on Long Island was such an over-unity system. The way that one apparently worked is he got the entire Earth itself in resonance. The crust of the Earth, as you go down in there, is made of highly nonlinear materials, particularly when you get down to the perovskite or whatever you call that stuff. And it will act in the bulk, even. It will interact in a sort of a nonlinear optics fashion. It will do phase conjugation. And so eventually what it does is everything going on is feeding energy into the Earth starts to feed energy into that wave that he created. So he gets a lot more energy in his resonant wave fed from outside, from the environment in the interior of the Earth. And that's the way he built up a humongous wave of energy.
Basically what he just said in easier to understand terminology is the equivalence of like ringing a bell. If you hit a bell, then you hear all that those acoustic waves being vibrated out. It's an amplification of what you just did. You hit the bell one time with, let's say, a little mallet. You hit that bell, and that bell will ring for a long time as it resonates until it finally comes back to rest. So essentially, every time you ring a bell, and like them dinner bells that you hear or whatever, or like the Liberty Bell, or in any big church bell, any kind of big heavy-duty bell, when you hit that one time, you'll hear it ring for a long time before it actually finally comes to rest and that energy stops. That's basically the simple of what he just explained that Tesla was doing by basically ringing the bell of the Earth. Because of all the minerals and materials, water tables and all the different types of things. So if you send a signal down into the Earth, and you resonate that signal out through water, and that water is in contact with anything else. When you send a wave through that water, under that water table, any other minerals out there, piezoelectric crystals, anything that will interact with that particular waveform will resonate. And so you can actually send it out, basically turn an entire cave worth of piezoelectrics, quartz, or whatever, into a big giant bass cannon. So when you're using it like a speaker, you can send sound waves clear across the globe, just like that bell resonating out through the atmosphere once you hit it and it rings, and then you actually hear an acoustic wave making an audible sound in your ear. So, you know, without that medium for it to transfer through, that wave to actually get to you, you'd never even hear that bell being rung. But either way, the short of it, the basic simple portion of it, is when you hit that bell, It begins to vibrate, and it will continue to vibrate. Those vibrations will go all the way up to the top of the bell and back down again until it finally comes to rest and the bell stops ringing. That's what he just said that Tesla was doing with the Earth.
His idea was you could then put in a tap on it anywhere else on the world and extract it free. And, of course, J.P. Morgan's take on that was, that's foolish. You can't put a meter on it. So that actually doomed much of Tesla's career at that point when Morgan found out that he, Tesla, was going to produce the energy freely. Small cost here at a central location. Everybody else could tap it for free. It wouldn't have powered the whole world today. It would have powered much of the world in those days. Tesla also, we're pretty sure, put a system in a car and ran a car on it. And the reason we're pretty sure is his nephew, who rode in the car with him, is still alive and can describe the incident and how the engine had no gas, no input of power, and would still run once Tesla got it started. And we know it's perfectly possible Tesla apparently knew how to use this giant negentropy process that's universal everywhere. Energy is free for the taking from the vacuum anywhere you want it. We just have to learn to use that. Some of the breakthroughs in the past have been deliberately suppressed. I will name a few. T. Henry Moray was inspired, of course, by Tesla's work, and he demonstrated so many times to so many scientific and engineering groups and people who were skilled in the art. There is absolutely no question that T. Henry Moray had a system that produced about 50 kilowatts out of a 55-pound box. This is well established as you go back and look at all kind of certified tests and everything else that he did. There's all kinds of skullduggery that happened there. I don't think T. Henry Moray ever got a decent chance to ever do anything with that. The Russians even tried to kidnap him at one time. It reads like a James Bond movie, but it's real. It really happened, and it really happened here in the United States. This was before the war. This was in the 1930s. In the same general period of time, one of the greatest
I'm going to try something real quick. I hope I don't mess this particular one up because I want to take off or leave off where I started there. See if I can scoot that down. Let's see here. I got to get a hold of that. Nope. It ain't going to let me do it. I can't get it yet. Oh, yeah, there it is. There it is. Alright. Because he's talking about T. Henry Moray, I'm going to go ahead and try to play this one here. Hopefully it doesn't. I think it may have.
The Sea of Energy in Which the Earth Floats was a revolutionary book written by T. Henry Moray, an electrical engineer and Tesla enthusiast who in the early 20s began working on a device he claimed intercepted radiant energy from outer space. His solid-state detector, the Moray Valve, was designed with a complex series of semiconductors, high-voltage capacitors, and transformers hooked up to an antenna and a ground wire. By stimulating the existing oscillations of space energy, his radiant energy device ran for days, putting out 50 kilowatts of electricity. His public demonstrations attracted newspaper coverage and scientists from Bell Laboratories and the Department of Agriculture's Rural Electrification Administration. Although no one could find evidence of fraud, neither could anyone explain how the radiant energy device worked. During the 30s, he developed semiconductors and transistors that were far ahead of their time. Unfortunately, as all too many inventors have suffered, when he refused to sell out to powerful interests, Moray and his family were threatened, shot at, and their laboratory ransacked. Ignored by the U.S. Patent Office, Moray quietly stopped public disclosure of the device after it was destroyed by his assistant, Felix Frazier, a communist sympathizer who was frustrated when Moray declined his repeated offers to take that technology to Russia. Today, Moray's sons, John and Richard, continue to pursue their father's dream.
All right, now let's see if I can go back to where I was.
Any other legitimate researcher in this area. All I can do is give you my ideas, and I wish to see simple little electrical taps pulling out enormous energy from the vacuum. They would much rather see you burning a lot more oil and so forth. So,
right.
The immunity to prosecution. That's their normal modus operandi.
I lost my place. I'm trying to find
Tesla also, we're pretty sure, put a system in a car and ran revealed the exact way that he constructed his negative resistor. But I used direct quotes where he, in fact, said, we have a negative resistor and we can disconnect the generator from this network analyzer when we got negative resistors in there because they will power the circuit. So that one was, in fact, suppressed. I don't know whatever happened to it, but it vanished. And he never did reveal the secret of what he called his open path, connecting any two points on the circuit. But it is in the literature and it's well documented because he was perhaps the leading electrical scientist in the United States at that time. Well, there's another one that went down the tube. Various and sundry people have made casual ones from time to time over the years. I'd estimate probably 50 different inventors have made casually invented something. Even if they didn't understand it, they did get it to go over unity. We're never able to get anything done with it. Most of the time, they incurred a lot of enmity from the scientific community. Sometimes we're really hounded. And sometimes we're just very naive. Sometimes very naive. Probably the best documented scientifically over-unity systems, self-running, self-powering systems, were developed by the Russians before World War II. It's in the French scientific literature, and it's also in the Russian scientific literature. The papers are there. I quote them in many of the things that I published. And you can go check the papers. The theory is there. Many papers are published on this in the Russian scientific literature. They built what we call parametric oscillators. They have an oscillator going and they change in the middle. They switch the actual inductance or capacitance or both of the thing so that it becomes a self-oscillation device. And they reached, goodly power for those days, 50 and 100 kilowatt devices. There are many ways of looking at the suppression that's occurred in this area, and certainly...
I want to pause that just for a second, because when he's talking about self-oscillation, if you understand the mechanics of how a magnetic field actually functions, like whenever you put current to a coil of wire... You know that that's going to produce a magnetic field. For whatever strength of the amount of energy you put in, there's going to be a strong magnetic field there that you can set there and hold by keeping the wire connected. The moment you release that wire, the magnetic field instantaneously begins to collapse. So you know it's going to come back the other direction. So if you have a way in which when the field is expanded, You're catching the energy on the way out, and then as that field is collapsing, you have a way to catch the energy on the way back as well. So that would be a really simple explanation of AC current, as that wave is coming in and out, back and forth. And from that timing, you can design a rotor that will interact with that magnetic field, the change in polarity as it's coming back and forth like that. And so to get something to self-oscillate, you would need to be able to understand that whenever the field is collapsing, you got a way that you can capture that energy, send it back in the opposite direction so that these two will start bouncing back and forth off of each other, kind of like whenever you bounce a ball inside of a building that has a floor or whatever, and that ball will hit the floor, then it hit the ceiling, and hit the floor, and hit the ceiling, and back and forth like that. And that's what he means when he's talking about self-resonating. You get this thing to interact off of each other back and forth. So let me continue on here.
I do not wish to talk about it myself, but I've been a victim of quite a bit of suppression. So has any other legitimate researcher in this area. All I can do is give you my ideas and drawn from my own experiences and what I think it is and where I think it's coming from. Today, we don't have so much big kingdoms. Today, we have big economic programs, big economic countries, or basically, we have cartels. We have a whole set of cartels in an area, interlocking corporations, and behind this, we have a few people who are quite wealthy and who own most things. Now, the normal nature of the beast for very powerful empires. Let's call that an empire. It's a corporate empire, a set of corporations, empires, basically a cartel. Historically, as far back as you want to go, we have had cartels. Any time we have a very powerful cartel or set of people that control a lot of things, that resists any means of changing its inflow of control and its inflow of funds and money and its power. You know, everybody's trying to be the big monkey. It's really as simple as that. And so the more powerful the agency, the more powerful the group, the more powerful the cartel, the more they will resort not only to legal means, but to extra legal means to suppress their competition. You know, this is an openly known today. For example, the greatest espionage in the world is industrial espionage between one corporation and another right here in America. They're the ones that hire all the spies and the spooky equipment and everything like that, by far more than the intel agents do. So that's one thing we have. We have the giant industrial, or really cartel, economic cartels in energy. And it's not one cartel. So there are many, many groups in energy. And each of those has become very powerful in its own area, and each one does not wish to see simple little electrical taps pulling out enormous energy from the vacuum. They would much rather see you burning a lot more oil and so forth. So, yes, there's in my view, there is a very active suppression effort by those kinds of folks. Part of that goes into very unique areas. They don't do it...
Before he gets any further, you know, that suppression thing is what really, really sets me off, is that, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, all well, you know, if it could be done, they would have already done it, which is the biggest ridiculousness that is ever spewed out of anybody's mouth, if they could already do it. He just explained pretty much how these corporations, they'll fight each other and spy on each other to steal, you know, stuff so that they can struggle for power. So a little guy like myself in the mad science lab trying to show people things and tell everybody that energy's free, you know, I'm like up against Goliath, so to speak, because, you know, ain't no way I can compete with their funds and all that kind of stuff. If I had the resources that they had, then we would already have this resolved, and it would be out there open source to everybody and his brother, like right now. We wouldn't be talking about this anymore. There wouldn't be no reason for mad science, because then at that point in the game, we got real science on the table. We got, you know, real advancements. We're back towards moving forward. You know, here we are in 2018 and we're still using Stone Age technology, and it aggravates the heck out of me. But the people, not only are corporations suppressing free energy and alternative energies, or, you know, even zero point or over unity devices, stuff like that. It's the average Joe out there that thinks that they're so well educated in, you know, physics and science and electricity, that they will come out there and they will be a part of the problem as well. So all you got to do is put the seed of doubt out there, and then people, you know, will be skeptical about anything that they see. You know, and especially in today's day and age, when you have access to green screen and blue screen technology, chroma key, CGI, and all that kind of stuff, you know, people can sit there and make all kinds of craziness go on. And, you know, if you understand what you're looking at when you're seeing something, there are things in there, you know, like, you know, camera effects that, like, for example, if you go back and you look at the old-style NASA footage where they were out there on the moon, there's a ghosting effect that's occurring with this particular camera that they're using. I showed this in a video called X-Ray. I didn't tell everybody why I showed it to them, but I showed it to them because if you put two and two together, you'll figure out why I showed it to them. But these particular cameras, you can replicate the same deal, but there's something that you have to have, and that's a secondary light source in order to be able to make this ghosting effect occur with this particular camera, where you can actually see through the person. You can see through my hand. You can see everything behind me. if I was standing at the right angle with that camera, because of the way that these old style cameras functioned, that unless you had a secondary lighting system, then you wouldn't see this effect. But either way, it's in my video x-ray if you're interested in taking a look at it. But there was a method for my madness, why I put out every single video that I put out. Let's continue on. Either way, the suppression is not just by the mainstream science community or the governments or the corporations. It's also by the average Joe who picked up a bit of knowledge in school, you know, was indoctrinated so heavy to not believe certain things are possible and believe that the laws of physics are written in stone and that everything that is theory is flat out fact. Well, it, by definition, theory is not fact. It's what you believe is actually occurring. So science has turned into scientism, and it's no longer the scientific method that gets you to the goal that you want to achieve as far as proving what you believe as theory to be now science fact. I stick my finger in a light socket, I get shocked. I do that multiple times, I get shocked, you know. And at some point, maybe you even get killed or whatever. That's proven science. We know whatever that effect is that's called electricity has at certain amperages lethal, killing force, and at just high voltage, it sends a shock through your system, causes your muscles to spasm and cramp and all that kind of stuff, and it hurts like heck. And so that's something that can be tested, it can be repeated, it's falsifiable, all these kind of things. And you can measure, all this kind of stuff. That's the scientific method where you're actually doing, testing and such. But most people will just grab the school book or even quotes from NASA or even quotes from Copernicus or any of the other people in history that, did any kind of science whatsoever and basically come up with theories about, gravity or anything, any of that stuff. Today's science says they don't know what gravity is. They just know it's a force. They know that when you drop something, it falls. Well, there could be other explanations for that jive with the actual theory of what gravity is or how it functions or whatever. There could be other explanations. And so unless you're willing to experiment, test, and repeat, and test and repeat, and find out the actual makeup of what gravity really is, then it's still just a theory. Everything in science is still theoretical that hasn't been proven by repeatable scientific observation. So your average Joe just quoting the school books telling you you're stupid, there's no such thing as free energy, you can't have perpetual motion, it violates the laws of thermodynamics. First off, they don't even understand the laws of thermodynamics, and they don't understand that these laws of physics aren't set there for the purpose that they believe. But nonetheless, if you understand the laws of physics, then you can use the laws of physics to your advantage, such as leverage. I can't go up there and lift 100 pounds with one arm, but if I put a lever under there and a fulcrum point, I can actually use that leverage to now lift more weight than my arm is actually capable of lifting. So that's physics. That's real, usable, provable, testable physics. I can lift 10 times my body weight with the right length of leverage and stuff and the right fulcrum point. So anyway, that's real science. And that's the science that I talk about here on Mad Science. And the reason why I call it Mad Science is because the mainstream science ain't getting the job done, and everybody's out there lying and stealing from each other instead of actually getting things on the table, the solutions necessary to resolve the so-called problems of the world. If you've got pollution and you know the cause and you know the effect of the cause, then you go trace it back to the source and you nip it in the bud right there and then, and you put a system in place that will, for example, in Florida, where the sugar mines, farmers are over fertilizing their ground, and the cattle farmers are over fertilizing their ground, and any other farmers out there, not to mention the fact that there's all kinds of septic systems in there, and most of Florida is sitting on sandy land or whatever. But all that stuff leaches into the water supply, and it causes algae, because algae's there to do a job in nature. And when you feed algae a lot of nutrients, then it will grow rapidly. So from the farm field and all the fertilizer and chemistry that they use, when it rains, it washes down into the lake, and any algae in there is now at a buffet table of highly nutrient-rich water and will grow like wildfire. So it's cause and effect. It's common sense. You know, if you feed something, it's going to grow, and it's going to continue to grow the more you feed it. And so if you understand that to begin with, you put systems in place prior to the water body that's actually being having its chemistry thrown off balance, that nature then in turn uses the algae to try to clean it back up. You filter that water before it leaves the farm field so that it's not highly nutrient rich, and then it goes naturally into the lake, and then you don't have that issue any longer as far as algae problem. Now, there's also another factor that a lot of people hadn't thought about. There's a deal that's called where you take fresh water and you mix it with salt water, you get what's called brackish water in the middle. It's where that salt water and the fresh water is mixing, and you can actually notice a physical difference in the color discoloration in that general area until finally, you know, that fresh water gets diluted enough and it's out there mixing in with the salt water. But if you normally had a path for all this fresh water to come down and to go all the way down into, like, say, the Everglades or whatever, and it had many, many miles before it ever even got to the ocean, then you're already diluting it before it ever even gets down there, or picking up salt particles that is mixing with it, and by the time it finally spills over into the ocean that is salt, a lot of salt content in it, you're not pumping a whole lot of fresh water at one time right down into that general area, which until it gets mixed in with that salt water. There are saltwater fish that cannot live in fresh water. There are freshwater fish that cannot live in salt water, vice versa. Just like there are plants and algae that can't live in either or. They have to be in their own particular environment. When these two environments clash, then you get a problem. You throw things off of balance. And so, possibility from out there in the Gulf of Mexico, when BP used all that Corexit, which I shouted as loud as I possibly could back then, don't use that stuff. And I tried to contact people. There's other ways that you can resolve this issue. Many other people tried to do the same exact thing, but the system didn't listen to us. But either way, that's what I'm talking about. That's one of the reasons why mad science still exists today, because people are still doing stupid things. So let's go a little further and see what we got going on here.
So much. It's not totally mafia type stuff. It's not like, you know, you just flat get shot. There's some of that. But one of the main ways of suppressing it is they take a deep psychological profile of an individual that they wish to suppress. What it means is they really wish to get him entangled in all kinds of difficulties he can't get out of. Now, a good trait from a human being standpoint may be a very valuable trait to somebody who wishes to manipulate you. For example, suppose you're easy to approach. That's a vulnerability. That's a serious vulnerability. So one's deep psychological profile is examined in great depth by real experts. And any way that you can be gotten to where you're naive, you don't have who knows international finance, you can be had on a money laundering scheme easily and not even recognize that's what you're in. So any way that you do not have good knowledge, or you do not have ability, or you have a vulnerability, they call them vulnerabilities, then they arrange scenarios just like you would write a movie. In fact, they do it with computers, all computerized. And in this scenario, we write a play where this particular vulnerability is going to be exploited in the target. Now, they keep deep psychological profiles on lots of useful fellows. These are people who basically have knee-jerk reactions or something, or they're radical, or they have some kind of way they interact which, if could be connected with you, would be in the area we wish the interaction to occur, to get you off into something else totally different than what you're doing. So the next thing you know, here, all it takes to set that up may be a phone call and stimulate the interaction to occur. And then the controllers sit back and watch the game go. It's gaming. But it's just like watching a movie scenario. One of these days, we'll probably write a book on gaming and how it's done and what kind of the main games they can use. But I can tell you they're very effective. You can get so many different games from so many different walks of life by...
One of the things that he's saying that pretty much there, you've heard me say, they send trolls into chat rooms. They'll send trolls out there on your YouTube video. They'll send people out there. These corporations, they want to keep their money. That's it. It's plain and simple. They want to keep their money. They want to make more money. They don't want free energy out there. As a common knowledge that if you understand certain things about mechanics and physics and science and electricity and plumbing and all that kind of stuff, that you can turn what you learned in science class into something that is going to produce the energy needed for you to live in the same luxuries that you got now. We're accustomed to being able to walk over and turn the light switch on. It's easier to pay the power company to do that. But you imagine if everybody knew that you didn't have to pay for that? Well, that's going to make where their wallet's going to get thin. They don't want that. So they don't have no problem paying a jerk a few pennies to go in and try to debunk every single thing that anybody's saying to the contrary, that energy's free. Just like the guy that I tried to talk to about building an engine. This guy, he's so incredibly skillful, talented, intelligent, and he could build an internal combustion engine, two-stroke engine, from start to finish. He had all the machinery to do it. He had the skills to do it. It was amazing. This guy built some really beautiful engines. And so I reached out to ask him about would he humor me and help me to build an engine specifically designed on water. Well, when I got through trying to talk to him, I finally had a conversation with him and typed in, spent all my time wasting trying to explain to him what the theory of what I'm trying to say that is possible, using everything from science and physics to make this engine specifically designed to run on pure distilled water. His education, his indoctrination kicked in, and then he pretty much did just exactly what the trolls did. He actually put a video out there and called it bollocks, and basically made a mockery of what I had been trying to talk to him about. Now, granted, to his credit, he didn't mention me by name in there, but I almost wished he had. Because then somebody else would come over and maybe they would hear what I had to say firsthand instead of just listening to this guy and being completely convinced that because he's so good at what he does, that it's not possible to run an engine on pure distilled water. But the fact is, folks, science says that water is hydrogen and oxygen. And when you separate the two, you've got two different elements. One is a highly implosive gas and one is a highly explosive gas. You need three things to start a fire. You need an ignition source, you need a fuel source, and you need oxygen in order to start a fire. Well, all three are available in that one instance, in one molecule. All three are available. Water is the perfect fuel because it has everything you need in it. All you have to understand is the physics of that. Combining, separating or recombining of the oxygen and the hydrogen molecule actually releases an electric charge. That's why they use fuel cells, where they can basically separate and recombine the hydrogen and oxygen in order to be able to extract electricity out of a fuel cell like that. Well, that's the only one method. But either way, even using the electrolysis process, when you force it across, you know, you're actually putting energy in, and you're doing it in a really inefficient manner, and it's, you know, destructive. But you don't have to go that route. If you understand that liquid can't be compressed, And so you have to change the state of that water from a liquid to a gas, then you know that at 212 degrees Fahrenheit, that water will boil. And then and anything higher than that, it begins to evaporate into steam, and steam equals pressure. And so you can see where I'm going. That's actually how they were able to run steam engines and such. So understanding the physics from the point where it's cold water, it's hot water, it's steam, and now it's a gas, now that gas is compressible, and you can also break it down even farther into finer, you know, using atomizer technology like in diesel engines and vaporization technology, sonic vaporization. There's ways that you can make it into a really super fine mist. And then if you understand the way that the pistons itself and the cylinder and the compression, how that all has to function, you know that you can heat that cylinder up using technology. There's all different types. You could actually build a wood burning version of what I'm talking about, where you heat up that cylinder, and then if you get that cylinder up above 300 degrees Fahrenheit, and then you shoot in some already preheated fine mist, the moment that hits, it's going to superheat and flash into steam, and it's going to expand 1600 times its volume, slamming that piston down. And then on that upstroke, between the pressure, the temperature, and everything that's going on in that cylinder, you can literally crack the hydrogen and oxygen molecules apart, and in that separation, you'll get an electrical charge, which is an ignition source. And so now you got compression ignition going on. This has been done for a long time in diesel technology. Compression ignition is how diesel engines work. When you get the diesel engine cylinders up hot using the glow plugs, that'll bring the temperature up. And then when you bring it in a finer mist, then that doggone fuel will then in turn burn. It doesn't explode like in a gasoline engine, because a gasoline engine, you're actually using a spark to ignite the vapors inside the cylinder, which, you're putting too much gas in there to begin with, the standard model, but, you know, we could even improve on that. But the simple of it is that this guy helped to suppress the possibility that you could actually use this type of fuel by going and putting this video out there telling everybody that I was pretty much stupid for saying that it could be done, because he said you can't extract enough hydrogen fast enough in order to be able to run a doggone engine. Which, if he would have listened to me from start to finish and put the school books aside, he would have understood that I'm talking about taking this water from its natural state, warming the molecules up, getting everything moving around, and getting it hotter and hotter and hotter in stages as it's going around through a tubing, which is the induction coil that's actually preheating the cylinder up. It's now turning that steam into smaller molecules and getting it hotter and hotter by the time it comes up around there. See, obviously, if you took cold water and threw it in a 300 degree cylinder, you would cause it to crack. You'd get that much power, that much pressure right out of the gate right there, that sudden change in temperature would cause it to crack. But you're already past that point, because you run it through the inside of the induction coil. You've already preheated the cylinder, so it's transferring that heat energy to the water itself, which by the time it gets up through the atomizer and then down and through the vaporizer, it's really hot, and it's in its smallest possible state, like a fog, you know, a little tiny mist or whatever. And then when that is injected into the cylinder at the proper timing and then hits that hot cylinder, the rest of it's over. Bam, you got that pressure, instantaneous pressure, slamming that piston down, and then on the upstroke, it's cracking the molecule, and then you get the implosion from the hydrogen and the explosion from the oxygen. And it's all physics. It doesn't defy any of the known laws of physics, thermodynamics, or anything. You're using the laws of physics to your advantage, and you're actually running an engine that was specifically designed and engineered to run off of that type of fuel. Water is a fuel. Regardless of what anybody out there, you can pour water on a fire all day long. Alright? And you can put fires out with water. Because in its state, it's cooler, it's a heavier molecule, it's suffocating the water, suffocating the fire and putting it out. But go look up why it is that firemen tell you never spray water on an electrical fire. Never. It's not just because you're going to get you could potentially get the crud shocked out of you if that water has any conductivity to it. There's another reason for it. It's a hydrogen explosion. You spray that on that electrical fire and that instantaneously flashes into steam and cracks the hydrogen and oxygen and you got a hydrogen explosion. That's why they tell you not to spray it on there. And I know this for a fact because back whenever I was in the Navy, I was a firefighter. I was a boiler technician / firefighter. My rate was a boiler technician, fireman, recruit when I got there and working my way up the ladder, whatever, you know, to apprentice and so on down the line. But nonetheless, I studied firefighting and I knew you don't throw water on an electrical fire for a reason and it ain't just because you could get electrocuted. So anyway, let's see what else we got going on here.
So many charming folks who are really oily characters that you would not believe it. And those come at you en masse. And usually they bury you. They bury you off in the courts. They bury you off. They get you tricked into doing an illegal act. How would they do that if you wouldn't violate the law? Real simple. How can you be made to violate the law when you're not a criminal? Simple. Let me give you a for instance. Fellow comes in and he says, you know, we really need to get some real major financing. Every inventor's poor. Everybody's struggling. Nobody's got the money to build all these buildups, which may cost $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 apiece. So everybody's struggling for money. So he comes in and we're going to raise this. We're going to form a stock company. We're going to do all these good things. Unbeknownst to you, he goes off to the Securities Exchange Commission and several other people, Treasury Department, and he says, hey, I think I have fallen in with a den of thieves. Of course, he's the CEO now, understand? Of course, he's the guy who knows all this stuff. And tell you what I'll do. If you'll give me immunity to prosecution, I'll help you catch these crooks because they're going to do the greatest money laundering thing you ever heard of. It's going to come right out of one of these foreign countries. It's going to be scrubbed and come in here to fund this effort. It's going to be laundered dope money or something like that. You have no knowledge this is happening. And they jump at the chance, they'll give him the immunity to prosecution. That's their normal modus operandi. They want to catch some crooks, and this guy's going to help them catch some crooks. So then he goes off and sets all this up, and keeps you deluded about what's happening. Now you wind up in where the thing is going to be consummated somewhere, and if you consummate it, you wind up behind bars, for about 20 years, wondering how you got there when you never did anything to money launder anything. He's the fellow who did it and who set it up, and he testifies against you because he's immune to prosecution. This is one of the standard games. Machiavelli is not dead. He still lives. And these are the games that are played, and it's particularly played in the systems where people are trying to build over-unity systems. It's been very effective in stopping some of them.
Do you think lethal force has been used?
Lethal force is used. I worked with an inventor, for example, the Sparky Sweet is quite well known. And he was shot at once with a sniper rifle from about 300 yards. The only thing that saved his life was he was an old guy and very feeble there towards that part of his life. And he was stumbling as he coming up the steps, and he fell down. He just flat fell down on the steps, caught his foot, and fell right forward. And as his head went forward, the bullet went right by where his head was. And, of course, the assassin was never found. So there are many cases like that. Some are killed. I believe Marinoff, I believe, to be a kill. I don't believe Marinoff jumped off a building when he was excited on the way.
Okay. Earlier, whenever I mentioned about there's a reason, there's a method to my madness, why I do the things the way that I do, is because What this guy's talking right here, if you go look into every single major, well-known alternative energy researcher, and then even some of the ones that I guess you could classify as urban legends, or, you know, the guy that built the carburetor that would get several hundred miles to the gallon, or, you know, the Geek machine or whatever, all these different ones. If you go back and you look at how they were treated and how they ended up meeting their demise, some of them committed suicide, some of them had basically heart attacks, and just other ones were said to be poisoned, and so they didn't fare so well. Because they came out there and they just put all their cards on the table because they thought, well, you know, and I got all this this machinery that I spent all this money designing and engineering, I'm going to start selling this. That's as soon as they started trying to take money from the system, as soon as they started trying to sell this, they met resistance, and sometimes to the extent of lethal resistance. Not to mention how many people probably trolled them on videos or YouTube or even in real life or whatever, trying to say that, you know, these things aren't even possible. Or the people that basically had them charged with fraud or whatever, the patent procedure that rejected them have a patent because they might have had the terminology free energy or over unity or zero point energy, or, you know, free electricity or anything like that. If you're ever going to try to patent an idea such as that, you can't call it over unity because the patent office will not give you a or perpetual motion for that matter. You can't call it that because the patent office won't give you any patents on it. And so you're up against the gun before you ever get it. If you think you're going to get rich from alternative energy, Then you have to be aware that you're going to go against the doggone mainstream energy industries. You know, all these people who are highly invested in coal and oil and gasoline, all this kind of stuff, crude oil. All these people that are highly invested in ways to deliver energy to you so that they can put a meter on it, they're going to fight you with every single thing they can. If you think that's if you need an example of that, go out and look at the history of the solar power industry and the wind power industry, and you'll see that there are, even in their own communities, people that want to reject it, and even the environmentalists who say they want to save the planet, say, like the blades of the doggone windmills is killing off the birds or whatever, or that it looks ugly or whatever, you know, it's an eyesore. And then when they finally do manage to get, you know, some solar panels off the grid, and they get enough power where they're actually putting power back into it, there was a point where they would actually pay you for excessive power coming in there. Don't know if some communities still do that or not, but if you got a huge solar array and you're putting power back into the grid, instead of you paying a bill, they will pay you for the extra that you're putting into the power grid. Well, if too many people are doing that, they stop paying people for that. Or they want to set it up so that you cannot disconnect from the power grid. You have to be connected to the power grid for insurance purposes, or so that your house isn't classified unfit or condemned or whatever, so that it's not safe to live in because of your own particular, you're generating your own power. There's actually legislation out there in different places where it's illegal to generate your own electricity. And that ought to tell you something, because you're sitting there, you're tapping into solar, which is free energy, you're tapping into wind power, which is free energy, and if you're living next to a stream, and the water's going that way anyway, use that high volume of water with a lot of torque and pressure to be able to turn a turbine that's then in turn, grinding up your corn, making meal or whatever. And you're using what nature's already provided to get a job done. Well, when they start saying that you can't go off the power grid, when they start trying to tax you because you're not on the power grid, or even try to fine you if you do go off the power grid and you're using it, on one side of their neck, they're telling you that the doggone planet's in danger of global warming, climate change, climate disruption, or whatever it's going to be next week, when the math or the physics or even reality, you know, if you're shoveling 20 inches of snow off your driveway when it's supposed to be heat, the planet's supposed to be heating up and sea levels are going to rise, but you're shoveling 20 inches of snow off your driveway, it's no longer global warming at that stage in the game because it doesn't match. So, no, now it's climate change. Now it's climate disruption. So, if you haven't figured out by now that global warming is a fraud and has been all along, then you didn't pay attention in science class and you sure haven't been listening to mad science. Because you can't be hotter than heck on one side of the planet, colder than heck on the other side of the planet, and then have a global warming at the same exact time. It just can't be. It's depending on your environment, depending on what people are doing, monkeying around with weather. And if you don't think that weather manipulation is possible, go look up on YouTube. There's a video out there where NASA is testing an engine that they're supposedly going to want to use to go to Mars. And it's a hydrogen engine. And it releases hydrogen and oxygen out into the air, which then in turn makes a big, huge cloud. Looks just like a cloud. It's water vapor. It's up in the air. And then the guy in the video says that somebody downstream is going to get rained on. And if that isn't weather modification, then nothing is. If you go back and look through history about cloud seeding, about how they used to try to seed the clouds to flood out the trails over in Vietnam so that these people couldn't get their equipment around because it's hard to get around in the mud, they did that. And if climate interference wasn't a business, then there wouldn't be websites out there that advertise geoengineering, that we can make it rain within a 180-mile radius of wherever you're at. We can fix you up. But when you tamper with the weather over here, you change temperatures, which cause a cause and effect. No matter where, heat rises, cold falls. That's what science says. That's what's been proven. And when it's hot, hot air will rise up to the ceiling of your house and cold air will go down to the floor. It's always colder on the floor in the wintertime unless you have your heat vents going through the floor. And when they build a house that the combination of the heating and the cooling is going through the same vent which in the ceiling, which means in the summertime your air conditioning is really efficient, but in the wintertime your heating stinks because all the heat is up there. You need to have your bed up all closer to the ceiling so you don't freeze in the winter. And you don't have to pay high electric bills. Not to mention the fact that they're using really highly resistive loads on the secondary element in your heat pump system, so that whenever it gets down below zero and the heat pump ain't functioning like it is, the secondary element will kick in. When that does, you go out there and you look at your meter on the pole and that thing is spinning like a top, it's going like a helicopter. It looks like the doggone thing's about to fly off the pole because the meter's going so fast, and you get a ridiculously high electric bill. That's all common sense. And trying to put it out here to the average Joe to allow them to understand why it is that you're being screwed over by the system, and saying we got solutions, but we got to get together and we got to do the work. We actually got to physically do the work when I put a podcast out like this, if you like what you hear in this podcast, you share it with somebody else who's interested in the subject, and you share it with other people to hopefully give them those ideas to think about. It'd be nice for people to, at the very least, not to pay near as much for energy use and still be able to live in luxuries. It'd be even better for the people in what they classify third world countries. And once again, I hate that terminology because I feel like everybody on this planet should be equal. And so if there's people out there that need heating or cooling or fresh water, then we as a society have the technology to make it so. We can bring this to them. It just drives me insane. So anyway, while I'm sitting here on a rant, and I've had my friends tell me I'm standing on a soapbox, which I find really insulting. It's insulting to my intelligence. It's it just makes me mad. And you know, I just, please never tell me that. That just gets under my nerve. If I'm standing on a soapbox, or if I'm ranting or raging because the system is doing the same ridiculousness over, and there's people out there in the world suffering, starving, or freezing, or dying of heat stroke, then I feel like my standing on a soapbox or my standing on a doggone rant is justified, because if I got a solution, or there's at least a solution that I can point out to you that you could resolve that issue and ensure that you're not having people die. I mean, come on. If there's a cure for cancer in 1967 and I've lost family members ever since then and watched them go through the torment of this doggone chemotherapy and the dang drugs that they put them on, or even butcher surgery when there was an alternative method all along that wasn't allowed in the medical industry, that's why I have justification to stand on a soapbox and be angry. That's why I have justification to be mad and to rant and rage. There are solutions out there right now. There are people that need to be healed. Hyperbaric oxygen treatment is a miracle cure, and it's not being used. There's all kinds of other alternative therapies out there having to do with oxygen, hydrogen peroxide, and stuff like that. There's all kinds of alternative medicines galore. Nature has provided every single thing necessary to resolve every single problem that we've got. If we decide we want to work in perfect harmony with one another and nature, we could literally produce a heaven on earth if we chose to do so. But as long as there's greedy people in this world that are willing to take your children and my children to war while they stay home eating caviar and riding around in limousines and being the kings and queens of the world, living high on the hog, you and your brother and your family and your children are going to war and fighting with one another for nothing, because there is no energy crisis. There's never been an energy crisis. So Scotty Sovereign in the TCT chat room says hi, Shaz. Hi, how you doing over there, brother? It's just like I'm on a roll. I'm on a rant. So I'm just, It drives me insane. And so, this is a whole lot more than just a radio show to me. This is a whole lot more. This is personal. Because I've seen things in my life that, you know, I don't like to see anybody starving. I don't like to see anybody suffering. And if somebody out there in this world's thirsty, and here in the year 2018 we can't give them a fresh, clean, safe glass of water, then we got problems. And all the wars and the ridiculousness and the theft and the lies, and you teach somebody something in science class. When I was in school, I was a science geek. I loved science because I wanted to know how things work. I paid attention. And so years later, I start listening to ridiculous science that had absolutely nothing to do with physics or chemistry or, you know, anything to do with what I was taught in school. And now they're trying to tell me contrary to what, you know, they said was the truth. And when I test and retest and I researched and it's still their explanation didn't add up, I speak out and I ask the teachers about it, whatever. Teachers only want you to memorize what's in the school book. They don't want you to be outside the box, to be a free thinker, to excel that way. Then you might end up being smarter than them or whatever the reason. So let's get back to what Tom Bearden's talking about here. You know, we're going to get down to the point where he's going to actually get into things that I disagree with. But nonetheless, pulling energy from the vacuum is what the research, what he was doing. And he won't even do any more research anymore because of the fact that, you know, people's out trying to kill people. People's destroying families. People's destroying lives just to suppress alternative energy methods. And the hypocrites in the environmental, groups and stuff like that, and the hypocrites in the governments and the corporations that want to lie out the side of their neck and tell you that there's climate change, they say we got to reduce our carbon footprint. And it, when you try to reduce your carbon footprint, or you try to put solutions out there, you try to give people free energy, you try to give them the knowledge of how, at the very least, we could achieve super efficiency on how we use energy, which is what Tom was talking about, that you are actually extracting energy that you don't necessarily understand, but it's pulling in more energy. Tesla showed that with the Tesla coil. Tesla showed that with a lot of his devices, the radiant energy device, and he showed you that there is energy everywhere. There's even a mathematical equation that will tell you how many feet off the ground per so many feet there, or meters or whatever, that there are 100 volts, and they go up, and they keep on going up until you get way up there in the sky, like the atmospheric group. They got 4 200-foot poles up there with wire with nano-coated carbon on it that's pulling that electricity right out of the doggone air. They ain't paid for that electricity. Sure, they paid for the equipment, just like you pay for solar panels, and or unless you got the knowledge to build them yourself, which is possible because there's tons of information on how, you know, photovoltaic cells and stuff like that work. So, it's just using what nature has already provided. Of course, you're going to get these jerks out there that's going to come around and they're going to say stuff like, well, this is not enough energy. You got a lot of volts, but volts ain't nothing because you need current to do this. Well, of course you need current, fool. That's what the doggone transformers and the electricity is designed for. The equipment that you're using right now is an energy hog. It's designed sloppy. It wastes more energy than it uses. But there's a way to take that high voltage and be able to move it around really fast and then push it back to current on the other side to where now you can use it again. So, if I can get somebody to at least humor me long enough to take some of this stuff that I'm saying and help me to manufacture any given machine, I don't care, whether it's a plasma reactor or an engine that will run on pure distilled water. And if they will humor me long enough to allow me to explain to them how the mechanics should work, you got some guy who can run a CAD program, you got some guy who can run a milling machine, some guy's really good at math, some guy's really good at electricity, electronics, and you put these guys together and you allow me to explain to them what we need to do, and I guarantee you, less than 30 days, we got an engine that runs on pure distilled water that you can put out there open source for everybody and his brother. And when it comes to electricity, and if you humor me long enough to say, okay, let's see if we can use electricity in a different manner than we did before. You know that high voltage won't run the current, but high voltage will energize gas into the fourth state of matter, which is plasma, and now you can take that plasma, which is now heat and it's light and it's radiant energy, and you can transfer that energy to something else that you want to use. You can take the high voltage and you can pressurize capacitors. And if you use the techniques that I'm talking about, you can not only do it rapidly, but you can do it on demand to the extent that you now have to drain power off these capacitors. Otherwise, they're going to pop. You know, everything in a capacitor, you got a dielectric in between two plates, and if that dielectric is gauged by the material that it's made out of, the breakdown voltage, like obviously wax paper is going to have a lesser breakdown voltage than glass, which would be the best dielectric, and so you know that this glass capacitor could withstand thousands and thousands of volts, whereas the other one, thousands of volts would short right through the plates and short the capacitor out, and now it instantaneously equals out the charge and the capacitor's dead. But if you understand that, then that means you could design capacitors that would be able to hold the equivalence of a lightning bolt, which is a lot of power. And then, as far as pressurizing them, since you know that voltage is pressure, and you want to be able to pressurize it rapidly, then you need to know that you can take multiple sources of high voltage, ram them into the same capacitor, and you will blow that capacitor up if you keep on doing the same thing, because it can't handle all that pressure and that current that's actually now coming in there. But now you got on-demand current back from a high voltage source. So where there's a will, there's a way. Now the biggest hurdle that we've got right now is actually getting the will moving, where we can actually get the people to come together and basically take everything that we've studied, all the research, and put it into action. So let's go on and see what else he got to say.
To talk about his invention and so forth, gave no indications of it. If I can believe the reports of the people who visited where his body lay on the pavement glowed. And there's only one weapon on earth that will kill a human body and leave where it lies on the cement, let the cement glow under it, and that's a longitudinal wave shooter, what's called a shooter. So I believe, my personal belief, I can't prove this in a court of law, I don't intend to try, but my personal belief is that Maranoff was killed. He was probably killed by either the KGB or one of their agents from one of the other Iron Curtain countries, killed with a shooter and thrown off the building to make it look like suicide. The police probably knew about it, that's why they let the body lay so long before they moved it. They didn't want to tangle with the longitudinal waves from it. So yes, there are some rather bizarre things that have occurred to some people. As I say, I prefer not to dwell on that, try to get by as much of that as we can and try to dwell on the science. The only way we're ever going to beat all of this stuff, we have to convince the scientific community that there's real science here. Let me now review some of the implications of...
All right, so I'll pause this for just a second, because this is one of the points that I disagree with Tom Bearden on there, because he's saying that we actually need to get the science community on board and convince them that this is real, possibility that this is real energy. These folks are set in their ways. They actually get government grants, and some are on a gravy train, or they're in colleges that don't allow any alternative views in there. You teach what you teach that is written in the book, and nothing else is acceptable. There is no outside deal. Even though they have research part in there, when they come across certain things that don't go with the norm, you'll see that these either get shelved or they get moved over to a black ops project, or now the government steps in because the government has given grants to this particular college. If they find something that is going to be a potential, air quotes, national security risk, that it might cause the oil or the economy to collapse, then they come in, they seize that technology, and then it gets shelved. So the college is a good stopping point for any kind of movement forward as far as the new technologies that they don't want on the market yet. So the college right there is one of the traps and the snares. So I don't care about the mainstream scientists. The mainstream scientists already sold their souls to the devil, and the mainstream scientists already got their 7 pieces of silver and moved along. You're not going to get them to entertain ideas, just like I wasn't able to get that brilliant individual and all that talent to help me build an engine that would run on water, because his indoctrination wouldn't let him go past that fence. But if I could find the average Joes out there, because there's a lot of average Joes that didn't go to college, but they're really intelligent, they're really talented, and they got skill sets that they've learned because they do the jobs. They're out there welding, they're out there machining, there's machinists out there, there's electricians out there, there's electronics engineers out there, there's mathematicians, and there's chemists and all this. If I can find those guys and gals that want to get together and actually do something, we can prove it once and for all. And the whole key is, it isn't what I believe is possible, it's what I can prove is possible. Until I can put together a dream team, I don't have the resources or the finances or the skill set to do it myself. I have the mechanical knowledge in my head of what needs to be done in order to make it function. And if I'm crazy and you test it, if you try it before you deny it and you test it, then you can tell me to shut up. Then I would literally realize that I've wasted all these years of my life studying, and that some of what was taught in school as mainstream science was all a lie to begin with. Because if it doesn't fit now, if this is what they taught me all the way through high school, grade school to high school, or junior high school to high school, or whatever, throughout my entire education and into the alternative education, and then all of the studying that I did after that, if none of that is valid and these things will not work, then everything that I was taught was a bunch of you know what. So if I don't know what I'm talking about, then they don't know what they're talking about, because I'm using their laws of physics, I'm using their science, and I'm using their mechanics, their leverage, their gear ratios, and everything that I was taught throughout the entirety of everything that I've learned about mechanics and electronics and electricity and plumbing and heating and cooling and all that. And I'm taking the best of each pieces of compression ignition, air conditioner technology, air compressor technology, induction heating, and so on down the line, all the way to the internal combustion engine, which is the closest case to over unity in existence of time, if used properly. If what I'm saying is not possible, if what I'm saying is not truthful, then everything that I was taught all that time, everything that I learned was all a lie, and they were wrong. So put it to the test. Not only put me to the test, but put them to the test. Help me to put together the dream team. Help me to get the people to the table to actually put on to out there into the public real, provable, irrefutable evidence that their teachings were correct, that their science was correct, and that the theories that they said were correct, and that what I'm saying right now is not a bunch of hooey. I'm not asking for any money. Never have. I'm not asking for any donations. I'm not asking for anything that I'm not willing to give. And I put my money where my mouth is, and I put my mouth right out there, and I put myself and my reputation on the line so that I can bring to you every bit of knowledge that I have acquired and through all this entire deal of research. And I'm putting it on the table, and I'm asking other people out there to join me and do the exact same thing. So I'm not trying to scam you, I'm not trying to sell you nothing, I'm not trying to beg from you. All I am trying to ask for is assistance in the fact that you bring your talents and your tools with you. I will bring my talents and my tools with me, and we will all come together, we'll meet in the middle somewhere, we'll build it, we'll prove it, we'll get it done, and we'll put it out there to the people so that nobody can ever refute it again. That it's proven science. That's why I say do not go to the doggone mainstream scientists. Don't ask the government for permission, and don't ask the corporations for money to help you out. Don't accept no government grants. Don't go out there and allow some individual to sucker you into, like Tom Bearden said, trying to get you thrown in jail for 20 years, and if that don't work, to come around and shoot you. The average Joe out there who doesn't understand mechanics or physics or science or anything like that, your job would be as simple as to back the people that are knowing how to do this kind of stuff, that have the knowledge, that have done the research, to ensure that you watch them and ensure that no shenanigans happen. Like if I'm working on something, you're watching my back. You're looking out the window for the guy that's got the gun, or the boogeyman that's getting ready, or the black men in black that's getting ready to jackboot the house or the lab or whatever. You keep an eye out for me, and I will do the work, and we'll get it done, and then we will hand it to everybody and his brother, so that once Pandora's box is open and everybody has that knowledge, everybody has access to that equipment, then the power companies can't do nothing about it. That is the only way this is ever going to happen, because history has proven it. Tom Bearden just explained it. They'll kill you to keep it off the market. And the average Joe who don't understand, who's been indoctrinated, will troll you to death and make you so angry that you'll want to quit. And if I walk away from it, my little piece of the puzzle goes with me, and then the world loses. And that's stupid. That's why I push on. That's why I keep on pushing on, hoping that I will find others who believe in it just like I do. And we're not going to go out there and try to scam or sell it to the world. There's ways that you can make money off the deal if somebody doesn't know how to make it. And they offer, well, I'll pay you for your time. I'll pay you for the materials. You build it for me. And then you give them a guarantee that once you hand it to them, it does work, or you're going to give them back their money. Period. That's fairness. That's how markets should be. If you sell a faulty product, then you give them back their money. And so, I'm not trying to steal from anybody. I'm not trying to scam nobody. I'm not trying to lie. I'm not trying to deceive. I'm trying to take everything that I was taught, everything that I researched, put it on the table to solve a problem that the mainstream said that we have. And I can't do it by myself without the dream team. I need the dream team. I need those who can make things look good. I need those who can build. I need those who can think like I think and want to think outside the box to try to boldly go where no man has gone before. That's what I'm trying to do here on the Mad Science Show. And when I see the mainstream and their shenanigans, and I hear the hypocrisy of the governments and of the environmentalists of this world who say that there's a problem, and when you come out with a solution, they refuse to hear it. This is why I call it Mad Science, folks. This is why. And people say, oh, well, all you ever do is just talk about it. Well, no, that isn't all I ever do. I go to places, I talk to people, and I push, and I keep on trying to get people together to work on things. I try to bring people together. I try to bring knowledge together. I try to bring the pieces of the puzzle, set them all down on the table together. And when we all merge, we can now see the big picture. We can fix this world if we choose to do so. I need to take a breath, so let's listen to Tom Bearden. Let him rant for a minute.
What I hope is just now emerging in these energy systems, where we take the energy from the vacuum, turn it into normal electromagnetic energy, and we catch it and use it to power our loads. First of all, every system we got out there has been doing this. We just didn't know it. We thought the generator powered the external circuit. It doesn't. It does not power it at all. All it does is, we twist the crank on the generator, the shaft, to turn the shaft, and that forms a magnetic field inside the generator, and that energy in that magnetic field dissipates itself upon the internal charges to force the positive charges in one direction and negative charge in another, and make that dipole, and that's all the generator does. It doesn't add 1 watt to the power line. All the coal, all the oil, all the dams ever built, all the nuclear fuel rods ever consumed, never added one single watt to the power line. All they did was keep rebuilding the dipole that we have designed the silly circuit to destroy faster than we can power the loads. Not the way to run the railroad. So we have polluted the planet. We're killing species. We're poisoning our own lungs and our own environment. We don't have to do that. But it's a giant set of cartels. It's a giant financial set of empires. And it's going to continue this way. Unless we get the attention of the scientific community focused on it, and hopefully get some legislative action focused to force the action to develop these kinds of systems.
Now, the truth is, we need the real scientific community, which is the people. We need the real people, the people in the natural science, the people into observing, the people into testing, the average Joe out there, the average worker, the average machinist, the average electrician. These are the real scientists. You are the real scientist. Not these ones up here in the fancy lab coats with a fancy piece of paper on the wall that says that they're an MD, a doctor, or whatever, of some sort, or, you know, a professor, or whatever. They profess all they want, but they ain't proven nothing because they can't get nothing accomplished. There's still craziness going on. It's the average Joe that's gonna take to fix this entire mess. You're just gonna, like my grandpa used to say, if you want something done, you gotta get up and do it yourself. If you wait around for the system to come to a change of heart and start to resolve issues, they're not going to do it. They've already got their bunkers built. They already got their arcs built. So if anything ever happens, the continuity of government's fine. All the good, super elite and rich and wealthy will be all up in the bunkers while the average Joe's out here choking on the fumes of life. And they're not gonna care about you. They don't care about you. If they did care about you, they would look into every avenue in healthcare, every avenue in alternative energy, every avenue in alternative medicine or whatever. Sometimes I think I'm repeating myself. I don't care anymore. But either way, let's keep going.
Now the implications once we develop them and start to use them. First of all, we don't have to have all this nuclear. Look how expensive and how long it takes to build a nuclear power plant. Then all the radioactive waste you have, you know, they still store the fuel rods on the...
That's right, because you don't need nuclear. You can do the same exact job with plasma technology that a nuclear power plant does. You could build a plasma reactor that would do the same exact job without the highly refined radioactive rods, just by understanding how radiation actually functions. First off, when these rods are all, you take them, throw them up in a centrifuge, and you mix all this uranium and plutonium and all this kind of stuff, and then compact the highly radioactive pieces that you gathered up into a ceramic rod, and then turn around and use that to heat water. And you can only get a small percentage of usage out of, like 2%, and then the rest of it's wasted. You got to put it in a cooling pond because it now won't boil water efficiently. While that energy is being released, it's actually interacting with the water molecule, causing the water molecule to move rapidly enough to produce steam that is turned into a steam generator. So if you understand that, and if you understand physics, the same way that your microwave oven uses microwaves, which is radiation, to boil your water, you can do the same exact thing with plasma technology. And you can do it in such a manner that if anything went wrong, it's not going to blow up and spit highly radioactive material all over the place that then in turn is going to affect your health and whatever. So moving right along.
Sites after they're spent. I don't know what to do with them. So you got all kinds of schemes about where you're going to put them. The blunt truth of it, right now we're storing them on site. It's at the nuclear power plants. The other thing is we don't need to pollute with all these hydrocarbon byproducts. We don't need to pollute the whole biosphere like that. We don't have to burn all that stuff just to make a dipole. Quit destroying a dipole. We don't have to remake it. So if we use the system where we extract it from the vacuum, we can clean up this biosphere. We can also, right now, one of the greatest critical things we have, in my view, the supply of oil is not lost, but the supply of cheap oil has now peaked. We are there. What this means is we will continue to get some oil, yes, but it will be more and more and more expensive year by year by year. Meanwhile, the demand for electricity goes up everywhere in the world, which drives the oil.
All right, now here I got to get in here too, because the oil industry out there is another one of the big lies that you will never, ever, ever, ever see a day where we run out of crude oil. The artificial scarcity is how they can manipulate the pricing of oil. It's physically and chemically impossible for this planet to ever, ever, ever run out of crude oil. It's not possible. As long as we're carbon-based life forms, that plant life and the chemistry, the temperature, and the pressure, and everything that this world has been doing since day one, it all recycles back into the system. And it's like when plants rot and they release heat or methane or whatever, you know, all of this is energy and everything. Even when you burn firewood, you change the form of that firewood, but you added the chemistry back into the system, nitrogen and all kinds of different things that is basically more materials for nature to work with. It all gets recycled back into the system. There's nothing that we've ever made that we could ever run out of. There's nothing that we've ever made that nature cannot deteriorate and break back down into its normal natural molecules. So when you burn the firewood, you're still releasing carbon. That carbon is not only plant food, it's fresh material. And so you haven't lost anything. According to their own laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does it go? It goes right back into the system. Just like when they're using electricity and electromagnetic waves and all that, you're affecting the energy. It's rebounding, trying to balance itself back out, and in that force of moving forward and backwards, you're getting work done. It's so ridiculously simple, I'm about to pull my hair out. I mean, I should really quite literally be ball-headed by now. But you're not going to run out of oil. But anyway, let's go on.
Curve again, and what you have is a classic escalation of prices type situation. The demand is up, the supply is down, the supply gets more and more expensive to try to fill it, and so the cost just going to go up and up, and they're not going to stop. Well, what happens? Somewhere along the line of about 2008...
Hold on, before it gets down into what's happening in 2008, let me point something out. Because it's hydrocarbons, gasoline, crude oil, diesel engine, kerosene, propane, butane, methane, and I could go on, alcohol, you know, all these things right here, all these things have something in common. Everything out there, including yourself, is fuel. All right? Anything that has carbon in it, anything that has water in it, anything that can be broke down, can be ignited into energy. Your body is pure energy. And I don't even want to go into the explanation of how your body is an incredible piece of machinery that is so incredibly efficient. And even the waste products that you expel out of your body have a use in the whole entire system. It all gets recycled. It's all more energy. So, it's not possible. It's not possible to ever, ever, ever run out of water, energy, oil, or any of the materials necessary to rebuild every single thing that's already been here. This planet, or Earth, or whatever you think it is, this realm that we're in, is a self-contained biosphere that recycles every single thing. It is the most brilliant design in the history of time. Itself. It's incredible. And we have the capabilities to pollute. We have the capabilities to affect. In the general vicinity of Florida, the proof positive, I just explained how over-fertilizing nature over there is causing a ecological disaster to domino from the farm field all the way down through the waterways, into the lake, out to the ocean, and all the chemistry getting thrown off balance. It's going to take nature some time to resolve that, but in the meantime, those fish keep popping up because they can't breathe, or the salinity in the water has changed, or the chemistry, because of what BP, British Petroleum, doing with Corexit and all these other crazy stuff, they're polluting the environment. But after all the animals are dead, after all the people are dead, once we've destroyed our environment to the extent where we can no longer survive without gas mask and some sort of algae for food, then we will have to wait until nature can clean it back up. And if you're an evolutionist, and if you don't believe that there's a God or whatever, a creator, if you're an evolutionist and you're a scientist, then you have to understand that if you believe in evolution the way that it was explained on how the primordial soup actually occurred, that it led to us going from a squiggly thing to a fish to a monkey to a man to present day or whatever, that once all this other stuff is all done, once we've destroyed our environment, we can't live in it no more. The chemistry's still here, the mechanics is still here, and nature will reset itself this time around, hopefully the next people that come from squiggly primordial soup, from squiggly thing to a fish to a monkey to a man, maybe next time around they'll get it right. But outside of that, you know, there's no hope for humanity unless we decide that this is going to be the time in history at this crossroad where we do things differently and we start working in harmony with nature and we stop allowing these corporations and these companies and these supposed representatives and even the environmentalist groups, the so-called advocates of nature, the environmentalists, the save the planet people out there. They have dropped the ball in such a major fashion that it is ludicrous. Now, you can't sit around and complain and complain and complain and complain, talking out one side of your neck while not doing anything about it. Until you're willing to get up and do the work or listen to the folks that have the solutions, then you have the 100 monkey syndrome or whatever. The one person in the room has a doggone answer to how to fix them, then you won't listen to him, or the other one that has an answer for something else. If you don't put those pieces of the puzzle together, you're just doomed to repeat the same cycle over and over again. And the world is what it is. I can't accept that. I can't leave this planet in the mess that I found it in.
The way I look at it and project it, we're going to have a world economic collapse. The economy cannot stand such increases.
Keep in mind, he said 2008.
God help us if we have a war in the Middle East. Nobody knows what. Maybe 2006, you know, instead of 2008. But I believe by 2008, we will see the world economy collapse.
Which
now, about a year
not.
Before that, as the economies are crumbling, not everything runs up and like a square wave collapses in one instant. As they start to crumble, and the stress on all these populations and all these leaders and all these nations increases so much, desperate people will do anything. Desperate leaders, particularly fanatical leaders, will do anything. What will happen is their conflicts will increase and escalate, and they will start to use the weapons they have in those conflicts. And there's about 25 nations now, according to the Secretary of Defense Cohen, that have mass destruction weapons. Nuclear weapons, for example, for goodness sake. If you don't have nukes, maybe you bought some surreptitious plutonium. Look at what will happen to your water supply in New York City. Put a little plutonium in it. So all kinds of things. People that are the poor nations that can't afford nukes have biological weapons. But about 25, and it's growing all the time, has weapons of mass destruction.
All right, so once again, you're hearing you're hearing them talk about all the doomsday, 2006, 2008 economic collapse, atomic wars, and all this kind of stuff. This is what ends up happening to people. When they go down the rabbit hole and they try to find some sort of understanding or trying to find some sort of justification why it is that we've got to get to clean, renewable, alternative energies. And that's why I despise the environmentalists. Because if they really cared about the planet, they would be sitting here in the Mad Science Show and trying to learn something of how that they personally can go out there and resolve an issue that's going on. When I reached out to talk to the doggone governor of Florida, Rick Scott, I sent him an email. Never got a response. You know, there's a problem. They're calling it a national emergency in Florida, state of emergency, whatever. No response. Not even, we think we got this covered. We've already looked into that or anything. Not even, whatever. If you keep throwing these out there, and like, there's a YouTuber out there, they call the Jug Squad. basically, they do all kinds of, videos about all kinds of stuff. Surfing and doing cliff dives and all kinds of just jokes or whatever. But nonetheless, they got several million subscribers. Puts a video out saying that Florida is basically people are dying in Florida because of this algae deal and all the fish are dying off, and shows videos of it all stinking. I even reached out to that particular guy there, told him there is a solution, a natural solution to resolve this. One in which if people use properly would actually benefit these companies financially to implement it, such as for example, if you use this particular plant that is already a native of Florida, it's called duckweed, and you make retaining ponds, and you put this down in retaining ponds so that any of that runoff goes into this pond before it ever goes anywhere off of that land, and allow that plant to do what it does naturally, it will absorb all the nutrients, it will absorb all the toxins out of that water before it's ever even released up out of there. And then in turn, you can take that duckweed and you can turn it into biofuel, you can turn it into chicken feed, you can turn it into fertilizer. So you can recycle last year's fertilizer with duckweed. You can have biodiesel in your tractors where now you're not having to pay near the fuel costs that you paid before. So this benefits the sugar farmer. And it can benefit the cattle farmer. And it can benefit the state of Florida. And it will definitely benefit the wildlife in the general vicinity of Lake Okeechobee and all the different, the Gulf of Mexico and the other side of Florida and everybody in between, including the citizens of Florida. It will benefit them. But they won't listen. I can't get the message to the right people who are ready to get the work done. And so all I got, I sit back, I watch this video, and I get frustrated. This guy's got two million subscribers or more or whatever. And I'm sitting here putting these comments in there, trying to get his attention and send him private messages or whatever. And at one hand, complaining out one side of your neck about, oh, boo-hoo, it's a problem. Of course it's a problem. You can see the fish are floating on the top. They're not having a happy day. But we can solve that and ensure that it never happens again just by using science. Just by using some common sense and some hard work and actually putting these solutions in action. We can resolve it. The economic collapse, who cares if the world's economy collapses? So what? The only one going to be affected by a world economy collapse is the government and the global elitist. When their money fails on them, let it fail. Don't worry about their money. Don't worry about their banking systems. When they come around, see if they come around and try to take 320 million people's houses because they ain't got no money no more and you can't pay them because they collapse the system. That's why they're not going to allow the system to collapse, because they know that if they come around and try to take houses from 320 million people, they're going to get mopped. And that's a fact. So, the world economic collapse, not a factor. Running out of oil, not a factor. Running out of fresh water to drink, not a factor. So, all of this craziness, all this doom and gloom, and we're going to all die, and the planet is polluted, and we're not going to be able to live anymore. If we get to that point, it's only because man chose to go there, because we have the solutions on the table right here, right now, ready to go, and we're trying to get these podcasts out there to people out there, and we got to get somebody to take just a split second, copy a link, share a podcast, somebody hears it, they do the same, and it goes viral like all these crazy videos of people shooting themselves in the face with a Roman candle. So the common sense of somebody shooting themselves in the face with a Roman candle and then complaining, oh, I didn't think it was going to hurt that bad, that will go viral, but the solution to save the planet, it don't go anywhere. 8,500 subscribers on my YouTube channel alone. All I get is mocked and ridiculed and a very few views, some thumbs down. And as far as monetization, I think this last month, I think my YouTube channel, because of an old redneck windmill deal that it's probably like $8 or $10 in a month's time. You know, it's nothing. It doesn't even scratch the surface. And the only reason why it's even on there, because I figured they're going to force it on me anyway. And so, you know, why not throw a few pennies in the bucket to help my research? Because every bit of the money that is invested in Shaziz Radio, Shaziz.com, Shaziz.net, and all this kind of stuff here, and all the time, effort to do radio shows and put YouTube videos together, all of this comes out of my wallet. And because I refuse to take donations from anybody, because I don't want that portion. I don't want the accuser of fraud. I don't want any of that. I want to put facts on the table. I want people to take these ideas. I want them to share these ideas, run with these ideas. And when I come across an original thought, put it in a form of a picture, post it on this site, it's for you to take and do whatever you want with it. Improve on it. You know, accept it, reject it, or tell me where I was wrong. Help me fix it. If you point something out that's wrong with this, that why it won't work, I will take it back into Paintbrush or whatever program I use. I will put a correction on there. I will put it back out there so that everybody who comes sees it from that point can then weigh the evidence and see whether or not they believe it's a possibility or not. That's how we do this. We've got access to great tools and technology that we can share information so rapidly that it's just mind-blowing of how simple it would be if everybody decided to at least do a virtual labs thing like Mark Brash from Zero Fossil Fuel. I don't know if you guys have ever checked it out, but there's a link on the doggone chat room. And if you click on that Zero Fossil Fuel link, it'll take you. He actually live streams his lab all the time. He's got his own chat room, so if you try to talk to him on YouTube, you're probably not going to get a hold of him. But he has his own IRC chat or something like that. So you can join his chat room. You can actually talk to him, and he'll respond to you in the comment section and stuff like that, and actually on the video. You can interact with this guy. But if you had multiple labs doing the same thing, we can troubleshoot things real time with one another. That's what I'm trying to get to. I'm doing it by myself. I'm asking and pleading for other brilliant minds out there to join me and help me to do this stuff together. We'll share our resources, we'll share our knowledge, we'll share our tools, and we'll bear the burden of the cost together. And if it's done honestly like that, then I'm interested. I will allow you to put money into the system as long as you allow me to do the same, put money into the system. Or do the equivalents in work or knowledge or whatever to basically do my part fairly and equally with you. That's what the Dream Team's about. If I can pull that off, if I can get the Dream Team together, we can make things and we can put them together and prove everything that I've been saying all along. So let's see what else we got.
Now, by the way, those weapons are already in our large populations. If you will check Colonel Lunoff's book, Colonel Lunoff is...
One other thing. With what he's talking about there, they said that United States military is in 156 different countries. All right, and so that means we got military bases everywhere. There's a lot of money involved in a military base. Look it up. And so, with that said, all these weapons that he's talking about, black ops weapons, missing money here and there, all these different conspiracy theories of where it's all going, a fraction of what is wasted via the federal government and even state governments, and even on a local level, a fraction of what they wasted would put together an engine that would run on pure distilled water and still have an overabundance of money left over to put into some other needy cause, such as helping to feed the homeless and so on.
The highest ranking GRU defector we ever had, and his book's cleared by the CIA, so what I'm saying is cleared. Lunoff tells you how the Russians introduced the nuclear weapons surreptitiously into their operatives on the ground and secreted them in the U.S. He tells you how it was done in the book. So read the book. All our big cities, as far as I'm concerned, and population centers already have weapons of mass destruction hidden in them. We used to call that dead man fusing. And so all the nations have dead man fused one another one way or another, and all the old studies show that in a heightened tension, great conflicts and high tension, whenever they start popping the nuclear weapons or the weapons of mass destruction, you have a very formidable thing that happens to you. Nobody has defenses. Since we have no defenses, the only thing you have is like a fencing duel. You have to hit the enemy before he hits you. You have to destroy him or you will be destroyed. Mutual Assured Destruction is a funny acronym. The only
thing that's debatable about it is whether the destruction shall be mutual or unitary. What happens is everybody fires on perception of preparation by his adversaries. And you have to fire everything you have as fast as you can, as rapidly as you can, as massively as you can to try to destroy your enemy, and otherwise you have no chance of survival. So what we get is the great Armageddon everybody's been dreading. The energy crisis going right now, in my view, will probably evoke a great Armageddon that we've all feared so long in about 2007. If we don't solve the crisis.
It's 2018.
Back up from that, it means the first quarter of 2004, these things had better be rolling off of the assembly lines like sausages, or we can all forget it and go home. It's too late to change it.
It's 2018.
That's how short a time we have and how short the rations are. Because of what I view as the stress, I view this as the greatest strategic threat to survival of the United States and, in fact, of civilization itself that has ever existed in my lifetime. Now, the fools may blow the world from other causes. Don't misunderstand me. But they're going to blow it from this cause. This I'm quite certain of in my own view. So it means that anything I can do to try to stop that has to be done. What we need is a great Manhattan Project. You can do it. This is a doable. We have the principles. We know how to do the giant neg entropy. We have good scientists. We have some sharp young grad students and postdocs. They aren't allowed to work on these kinds of things. For goodness sakes, let's marshal them together like we did in World War II to get the atomic bomb, which we went from zilch, you might say, in 4 years. We had an operational bomb. Let's do the same thing here because survival depends on it. Not only of us, but of civilization. There's even a little evidence, and I don't know really how to put this in perspective. We had one friend, for example, that we worked with very closely who built practical over unity systems. He demonstrated at a conference, for example, an 8-kilowatt system. And then very mysteriously, he and his whole family disappeared. We have found out since, in fact, not long ago, that he's still around. And he's doing very well because he was attired in a very expensive suit and a very nice automobile. But he and his family are okay, even though they disappeared back there. But here was a successful unit that just flat disappeared off the face of the earth. Now, I assume, rightly or wrongly, it has to either be for the great financial empires or it has to be for some kind of black project that somebody needed a power system that would power itself in the load. And they classified it. Whatever it is, I don't know. But whatever it is, the survival of humanity itself and civilization itself is now at stake. And I really believe through the auspices of the U.S. government, regardless of what that kind of program in it anywhere may have, we must bring it forward to save ourselves and save the earth. If we don't, we can keep it secret or we can keep it in the control group hands and we shall all go down to oblivion in about 2007.
All right, it's 2018 again, but nonetheless, overpopulation is a flat-out lie. It has always been a lie. There is no way that we could ever run out of food sources on this planet. Not even remotely possible. Because worst-case scenario, we can take what nature's already done and we can turn it into a food source. I mean, most of us would like to eat, really good, grilled cheese sandwich, maybe with some ham or something like that on it. But nonetheless, if you really had to survive, if you go out there and look at your yard, there's a website out there called eattheseeds.com or eattheweeds.com or... They're foraging. There's so many different places out there that show a bunch of different natural foods out there, and even things that you wouldn't think are food. There are certain types of algae that are highly protein and nutrient rich that you can eat. You can eat duckweed and stuff like that, and you have to know how to prepare it. But the chemistry of everything that we need to survive is continuously rejuvenated on this planet. There's no way, if we utilized our resources properly, that anybody on this planet should even be able to starve to death. It's ridiculous. But all of this, everything that he's been saying about the wars and how, you know, they even believed that we weren't going to make it this far because the system was going to collapse itself or it wasn't sustainable. They continue to say things like, we got to make, this is non-sustainable, our population's too big, or we got to make clean, renewable alternative energy sources. But every doggone time somebody comes to the front with an alternative energy device, it either gets attacked, ridiculed, debunked, suppressed, hidden, or whatever, so that nobody ever gets to benefit from it. So, on one hand, they're saying this doom and gloom in the air, and we're all going to freaking die, and we need this clean, renewable energy, but every time it comes forward, they nip it in the bud before it ever even gets out to the general population, who wouldn't understand it anyway, because the laws of physics and everything of indoctrination that they were taught in school said it's not possible. That's why. That is why I call it mad science. Because I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the ridiculousness of people saying that the world's coming to an end, we're all going to die, we're overpopulated, we need to get our population down, we got to kill this many people, otherwise we can't do it. Look, I got in a feud with one of my best friends just yesterday because I told him, I said, look, man, this world could withstand 10 times the population. There's more than enough resources available on this planet that we got right now. 10 times the population. They say there's almost 9 billion people in the world. I'm saying we could withstand 10 times this population and be able to feed every single one of them, be able to house every single one of them. Would they live in the luxury like they do now? Would they all have 40 acres? No, it would be pretty crowded, but we still have all the resources necessary. And when it gets too overpopulated, nature will do the job. Nature determines how many people are allowed to be on this planet or in this realm or whatever you think we're in. Nature is in control. Mankind is not, has not, will never be. Period. No ifs, ands, or buts. Just like my friend Steve said at the very top of this doggone website that we're on, nature needs no improvement. Only the arrogance of man requires change. He hit the nail right on the head. So stop with all the doom and gloom. Stop with all the doggone, we can't do this, we can't do that. The government's too powerful. We the people are feeble and helpless and we can't feed each other. Stop asking for permission to feed the hungry. Go out there and do some guerrilla gardening for Pete's sake. Go out and buy you some doggone seeds and throw them out there. It's amazing how you plant an apple and it grows a tree, and that tree has a bunch of apples who all have another seed in it that plants yet even more trees. And there's so many fruits out there that, and vegetables, and even a rotted doggone potato will grow more potatoes. You can get seeds out of so many different fruits and vegetables and bulbs that you can plant and replant and plant and replant. You're not going to run out of food if you use everything wisely and you take care of nature. Nature will take care of you regardless. Stop all the wars and the ridiculousness. Stop all these doggone criminals that are running the federal governments, the state governments, the local governments. Stop all these doggone people who are out there criminalizing everything under the sun, putting every piece of red tape possible to deny humans freedom and a life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Stop allowing them to do what they do to your brothers and sisters. Period. This is why all the suppression that's gone on, and all the trolls that come out against free energy, and all these knuckleheads that are out there faking free energy devices, there are thousands of them. There are people out there monopolizing on free energy, making a mockery of what I'm saying, what Tom Bearden said, what doggone John Bedini and Tesla and Stan Myers and so many other name brands, John Searle, Doggone it, there's so many of them I can't even remember how many people tried to show people a different way to do energy so that we could all get past this port where everybody is under the thumb of the energy deal, the so-called energy crisis that never even existed, the so-called scarcity of crude oil, the so-called scarcity of fresh water to drink. Go ask the people in Dubai how they get their water. How do they filter the water once they get it and they flush their toilet with it? Dad, burn it. If these people can build the land that they're standing on with skyscrapers to boot, and it's a beautiful, millionaires live there. They built the land they're standing on. They built the buildings. They built huge desalination plants. They are a prime example of what could be done with technology and science. But these people that you call your leaders, that you keep voting in and arguing back and forth, which one's the good guy, which one's the bad guy, which one's going to get us into war, which one isn't going to get us into war, don't let them get you into war. Don't let them steal your health, don't let them steal your life, don't let them steal your neighbor's freedom for trying to put up a solar panel or trying to put up a wind generator. Hold their feet to the fire when they say that we got to reduce our carbon footprint, and you see somebody attempting to do just that and the system comes down with a jackboot on the neck of your brother or your sister, you rise up against that system. That's the only way you're going to resolve it. When we the people finally say enough is enough and we stand up to all this craziness, and when we the people start respecting one another and stop trying to tell somebody they're stupid because they're not saying what the school book said. It's okay to mock the Bible. It's okay to say that the Bible's a lie, but you can't say that the science book's a lie because the Bible was written by a man. Well, I got news for you. So was the school book. The school book was written by a man, so if any book that is written by a man is questionable, then all books are questionable. And if any science doesn't bear out, and if any science is being, all theoretical and then basically being used as factual, you can't win a debate if you're going off of somebody else's theory. If you ain't willing to stand up and test that theory, put that theory to the test and prove and continue to prove that that theory is still holding up. You can't say that gravity exists just by dropping the microphone. You got to show. You got to test. You got to make it repeatable. So if you're out there trying to win a doggone debate by telling people somebody else's information that you got from a school book, trying to make yourself sound all intelligent, if it still says theory under it, if it hasn't been proven scientifically with the scientific observation and it's still a theory, you can't lay that down on the table as fact. You can use it as, this is what these people believed, or that's what those people believed. We don't know for sure yet. It's still theoretical, but this is the information I'm basing my information off of, and this is my experiment to back up what I believe that they said was possible. So is the earth round? Is it flat? Is it concave? Is it hollow? Is it dodecahedron? Until you get out there, until you test what somebody else has already told you, then you're relying on what somebody's information was from a book that was written by man. So while you're discounting my God and I'm discounting your science, neither one of us can prove or disprove unless we get out there and we put our money where our mouth is and we do the actual test to show the reality. And the folks that say math is reality, well, you know, maybe it is, maybe it ain't. But if you can make math fit any model, then there's something going on there. If you can sit there and say that just because Einstein's theory of relativity was said by a brilliant man, and other people say that it's not right that but still it's Einstein, and you're using Einstein's argument. If you're using any of the laws of physics out there, and all the theoretical science, and even quantum physics for that matter, Until the experiments, until the evidence is on the table, and you're basing your science and your deal off of what they said. See, I get out there and I test the science. I test for the limitations. I see what can and can't be done. And when I find something that can't be done, I ask the question, why is this, that this can't be done? The lens effect, is that causing this? If so, how do I get before the lens effect and don't invoke the lens effect and still get the results that I want out the other side? That's scientific method. We can do this. Let's see what else Tom's got to say.
If they don't have a war in the Middle East or something and do it in 2006 or 2005. I'm a co-author of a paper in the literature way back there which reports a successful anti-gravity experiment. I'm not going to do another experiment, not even going to participate in one. Not going to. So, everybody's got a little bit different circumstance. And my circumstance, for me to go on living and staying healthy and doing well, depends on me avoiding certain areas, and that's one of them. But I can work in energy. I can even work in the medical area. But right now, the medical won't do you any good if we all go down the tube.
Exactly.
So energy is it. What needs doing immediately deals with the scientific community. If you look at what the scientific community is doing, I'm speaking sadly, but I'm speaking bluntly and truthfully. If you will read the literature, you will find it's almost business as usual. They're not doing anything that has any chance of stopping this problem before the world explodes in our faces. Sure, windmills are good. Burning the oil cleaner is good. All of these things, building a couple of more dams is good if you don't destroy too much of the biosphere, etc., etc. Building some windmills is good. However, that's a spit in the ocean. It doesn't solve the problem. The problem is just exactly like what we had in World War II. We have a problem. It's a doable. It can be solved very quickly because we've got the first half of it already solved, how to get the energy out of the vacuum. So half of it is already done. But we can't get the scientific community to move on it, to turn those young grad students loose and those young postdocs loose. The professor at the university, for goodness sakes, is trapped. He's absolutely trapped. All universities are greedy. They want the overhead money. He's got to bring in extra money. He's got to get patents. And, of course, he's got to get his papers published. So he's caught in a process where he must compete for the packages which are put together and come down for availability to compete for. If he doesn't get those packages and win them, he doesn't fund his grad students, he doesn't get the overhead money, he's going to be lucky if he's working for the grocery store instead of being a physicist. So he's in a mad scramble to try to feel and keep running on a treadmill to meet the conditions that have been laid down on him. And goodness sakes, those packages already prescribe all the research he's going to do and his grad students are going to do. So we've got the whole scientific community working on the wrong problem.
What could the U.S. government do about that?
What we can do is do just like we did in alternative medicine, or really like the Manhattan Project. You can order the scientific community to do it whether they wish to do it or not and hold them accountable from the highest level to the bottom. How much money are we spending in our national laboratories on nuclear stuff? Don't we think at least about 10% of that money ought to be rooted out of there and spent on nothing but this, which might save us while the other stuff takes us down the tube? Of course we should. In fact, it ought to be more than that. The best scientists we have, the best grad students, the best postdocs ought to be turned loose on this problem, and that means funded. And that means that we do not allow scientists to slander and libel people who are trying to do research in this area.
That's right, and that's
right now they do it wholesale, and they do it at will.
That's it, and that's enough. I'm not even going to finish out the podcast. I put the link in the chat room down there for you to watch the listen to the complete one without my mouth involved in it. But nonetheless, the fact of the matter is, until you let these brilliant minds out of the box, if governments really cared about resolving these so-called issues instead of continuity of government, if they really cared, if the environmentalists really cared, they would focus resources and funds towards helping these people to prove the things like I've been saying right here. How do you know if an engine could not run on water unless you have actually tried to build it using all the known laws of physics? Unless you've actually physically built one and it failed, then you cannot say that it's not possible to run an engine on water. So the man out there who made the video called Bollocks, that basically made a mockery of his own self and his own laws of physics and his own skill set on top of what I was trying to explain to him, because he didn't understand it because his indoctrination was stronger than his IQ. That is why we're in the jam that we're at. That is why mad science still exists. And until we get to the point where we decide to free the minds and allow free thinkers to do what it is that they can do, then we're never going to resolve this. And we're always going to be in war. And there's always going to be somebody starving. And there's always going to be people dying needlessly from illnesses that are curable. And it's insane. And it drives me batty. Otherwise, why do what I do? I don't want to leave my grandchildren a world that is this messed up. I don't want to leave my grandchildren into servitude. I don't want to leave my grandchildren into a world where toxic is what they have to eat and breathe just to survive. I don't want to have them have to go to war and kill somebody else's children. If humanity is ever to reach the full potential and enlightenment, so to speak, then we the people got to get our act together. It's because it's we the people that are the ones that are the builders. It's we the people that are the ones that are going to war. It's we the people that are the ones that are suffering through chemotherapy and radiation and all the craziness that the doctors use, the butcher techniques that they use to try to cut out a tumor or whatever. Hyperbaric oxygen treatment has cured brain tumors. But mainstream medical industries and insurance companies, they don't promote it. They don't promote anything that is a potential cure. You got to go through all the doggone red tape of the Food and Drug Administration and the politics and all the craziness. If the doctor didn't say it, then it's not possible. You got faith in doctors and scientists as if they were gods, and they are not. They're not gods. They never will be gods, even though they hope to achieve to become like gods, because they want man and machine to merge, put a brain chip in there to give them superhuman abilities as far as thinking and processing speed, and eventually sometime when the singularity occurs between man and machine, we're no longer human, which takes away the whole purpose of being human to begin with, because we're unique. So I don't know what more to say. Science risks life and liberty and freedom of all the people of all the earth without their permission or their consent. Constantly. The things that they do up in CERN, 13 teravolts or whatever, that they run through this collider to slam things together so they can see what comes out of it. Imagine the amount of money involved in that one particular deal. The governments of the world waste so much resource and so much money. The companies and corporations out there do the same. Just with the waste alone that factories make, there's more energy available in a sawdust factory, a doggone wood, what do you call that, a sawmill, where whenever they cut into 2x4s and all that, and all that sawdust is cut up. That is fuel. It's a renewable resource. in all the industries that are making aluminum and milling and places that they're grinding down metals and shaping machines and that kind of stuff. Every bit of waste in every single possible scenario that you can talk about, including the food industry, is a renewable energy source. And so if you want to talk about incredible efficiency, first you got to look at the waste. We waste a lot. We waste more energy than we use to run our fans and our air conditioning. We waste more energy running our cars. If there was ever an example for over-unity device, a internal combustion engine would be that. It's only 30% efficient. It wastes more energy than it uses. There is an incredible amount of heat energy, to the extent that if you do not have a radiator and a fan and electrical to run the fan, so that the engine has to work harder to produce electricity in order to turn the alternator or generator, to turn the electric fan to disperse that heat away from that engine. If that any portion of that system fails, the engine will produce so much energy that it will destroy itself. We have the knowledge and the science to back it up, and the physics and all the materials necessary to build the perfect machines that waste absolutely nothing. And yet here we are, arguing about fossil fuels, the so-called fossil fuels. Here we are talking about energy crises, financial collapses, starvations, wars, and sickness and ridiculousness. Well, mad science is here to say that we got the answer, and the only one who can implement that answer is we the people. When you're ready to do so, please share this podcast. Please share the information with somebody. Never once have I ever had any video or any podcast go what they call viral. I'm saying we can solve the problem in Florida with the fish dying off. We can work in harmony with nature. We can solve all the environmental issues in the world. We can get rid of the nuclear power plant waste. If you want to continue to run the power plants, then give me for free the nuclear spent rods, and I will turn that in to more electricity. Because when it's 2% down, and it will no longer boil water, and you have to store it for 10 years in a cooling pond, then that ought to tell you something. The energy is not gone. It is still useful. Supposedly, we sent a probe all the way to Pluto using a little thermal reactor with plutonium in there that had enough power to get down to the other end after 9 years of traveling through the deep dark space. This is what science said. Take a picture of a place down there. So I mean, somebody had to light that place up. So you had to turn on the lights, turn on the camera, take the picture, send that picture digitally back through the deep dark space so that you could show it on your website, NASA. Now, if you got that technology and you're telling me that I'm foolish, we got an issue. I challenge any one of your best scientists, any one of your best environmentalists, any one of your most brilliant minds on this planet to a honest debate. Bring them here. Put your money where your mouth is. Put your knowledge where your mouth is. Put up or shut up. Stop telling the world that we're all going to die, that we're all going to starve, that we're all going to be doomed and gloomed for here to eternity. Stop complaining about things that you're not willing to fix when somebody's handing you on a silver platter the solution that has already been given Everyone and his brother already has everything they needed. They have each other. They have the resources. They have the technology. They have every single thing necessary. When they decide to bring their toolboxes together and their knowledge and their talent, we'll get her done. Period. No ifs, ands, or buts. You've been listening to Mad Science. If you like anything you heard on this podcast, take whatever you like, leave the rest, or take it all, chop it up, go through, and there's so many podcasts out there, it's ridiculous, and take whatever you want, and it's all free. Everything I do, including my time, including this website, is free to you in the world. I'm giving the best of what I got to everybody that's willing to listen. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science, and don't think this is the last
man that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one hand.
Ooh.
One hand.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one hand.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this? You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.